traveling around for the past couple months, doing lots of events and speaking engagements, and we're very happy to be here.
Oh, real happy to have you here. Thank you. Oh, I'd love to hear that. La música.
Puedes tocar la quena.
And he made this too.
Sí. Bueno, primero quiero saludarle esta tarde.
I just would like
todos
to
los amigos
say hello to
que
everyone.
Escuchan a esta radio
all
y
the friends who listen to this program on the radio.
Y agradecer esta emisora que da esta oportunidad de hablar nuestro mensaje de la selva.
Y many thanks to our host for having us and giving him the chance to bring his message
welcome.
From the jungle.
Posiblemente están escuchando muchos amigos latinos, ecuatorianos y vecinos colombianos o peruanos.
Maybe there will be some friends, some Latino friends and friends from Ecuador and Colombia who might also get to hear this program.
Muchos saludos. Quiero and dar sí. Mensaje de la selva amazónica del Ecuador.
Many salutations to everyone, and he wants to bring his message and his music.
Esta música para nosotros es una música espiritual, una música que vivimos en la selva.
This music for us is a spiritual music. It's a music that we live in the jungle.
Es para la mañana, a las 3 de la mañana, 3, 4, 5 de la mañana, amanecemos en una ceremonia de té de guayusa.
We rise very early, around 3, 4 in the morning, and we play this music with our daily ceremonies where we drink guayusa tea.
Esperando actividades de trabajo, esperando el sol.
Waiting for the sun to rise, waiting for the day to come, for our work, the things that we will do.
Para visitar lugares sagrados, para visitar ríos, para visitar lagunas.
To visit sacred places, to go visit rivers and lakes.
Entonces, té de guayusa con la quena es una relación espiritual entre el hombre y la naturaleza.
And so guayusa tea with the songs and the sounds of the flute is a spiritual process of connecting between humans and nature.
Que es dirigido por los abuelitos de la comunidad, ¿no? Cada mañana y
and these things are led by the grandparents, the elders of the community every morning.
Entonces traigo mensaje, noticias de la selva para compartir y informarles al mundo, ¿no? A todos los seres humanos en la tierra que está pasando en la selva, ¿no?
And so I'm here carrying the messages of my people and the messages of the jungle to share those messages with the world and to tell people what is happening there.
Yes. And tell us what has been happening. I understand that there's been a lot of development of the land through the mining industry, the oil industry, and timber industries, and they're destroying a lot of the Amazon, and your people are working really hard to preserve it. The organization, your community, Amazanga, the forest protectors and healers of the Quechua, and Shuar, that's your descent, your lineage.
Si puedes compartir con nosotros qué está pasando allá, que escuchamos que hay mucha destrucción por las compañías petroleras y las compañías de mina, y usted viene de comunidad Amazanga, de gente de Shuar y Quichua, y hemos escuchado que ustedes son protectores y guardianes del bosque. Si puedes compartir un poco de eso, de qué está pasando.
Sí, gracias. Mi nombre es Flavio Santi.
Thank you.
Santi.
My name is Flavio Santi in Spanish.
Mi nombre original es Ayui Yu.
My original name is Ayui Yu.
Vengo de la comunidad Masanga.
I come from the Amazonga community.
De la selva central de la Amazonía.
In the central jungle of the Amazon.
Mi mamá Quichua, mi papá Shuar.
My mother is from Quichua origin and my father from Shuar.
Entonces decimos como Quichuar.
And so Shuar-ki. Our community, Shuar-ki. We call ourselves Quichuar because we are an intertribal community.
Es una comunidad de multilingüe, multiétnico, porque están rodeados de muchas familias, casados, cónyuges entre Quichua, Achuara, Shuaras, Záparos.
This is a multi lingual and multi-ethnic community that also has some people from the Ashuar descent, and so we have different languages and cultures mixed together.
How many people, are part of the community? How many members are there?
¿Cuántas personas hay en la comunidad?
33,000 hectáreas de territorio.
There tenemos are 33,000 hectares of territory that
cuatro,
make up...
4,600 indígenas en este bloque.
There are 4,600 people in this block of that area.
Mi comunidad está de 12 familias, como 80 miembros de la comunidad.
And my particular part of this community is about 80 people.
36 comunidades.
There are 36 communities in this network.
Círculo de 33,000 hectáreas de territorio.
And they're all working to protect.
Y todos están trabajando para proteger de esta parte del bosque.
Sí, como está muy cerca a la ciudad, estamos rodeados de muchos impactos ambientales, culturales, espirituales.
As we are very close to the city, we have lots of impacts from different developments, and this affects things in both physical and spiritual ways.
Mi organización se llama Comuna San Jacinto.
This organization of communities is called the San Jacinto Commune.
Pertenecemos a la Organización de Pueblos Indígenas de Pastaza de Quichuas.
And this is under the organization of Indigenous Peoples of Pastaza, the region that they are in.
Estamos organizados a la Confederación de Naciones Indígenas de la Región Amazónica, CONFENAI, y la CONAI a nivel nacional.
And they also organize within the CONFENAI, which is the Confederation of Indigenous Nations of the Northern Amazon, and also the CONAI, which is the Confederation of Indigenous Nations of all of Ecuador.
Tenemos una estructura organizativa. Yo soy ex dirigente de la CONFENAI de Comunicaciones, Relaciones Sociales.
Formerly was the director of communications for the CONFENAI.
Sí, la comunidad Amazanga es una de las comunidades que viene siempre proponiendo proyectos culturales, proyectos que defiende los intereses indígenas y no proyectos que absorbemos que el gobierno nos da como resultado. O sea, nosotros queremos un desarrollo propio.
And so the Amazanga community has always worked to form and propose cultural programs to preserve our ways and not to accept the ways that the government wants us to follow.
Sí, Casimiro también.
And Casimiro also
is
our host friend. Perdón, Casimiro también es amigo de ella y también trabaja así.
Sí, Casimiro es un abuelito maestro, mío también.
Casimiro es a teacher, a grandfather, a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm. Y conozco muchos yachaks de la selva. Y
I know many shamans in the jungle.
Ajá. Uh-huh. And you're the president of the Wanduk Foundation and the director of the school of, pronounce it once more.
Wayusa.
Wayusa. So, can you talk a little bit about the school itself, La Escuela?
Y eres presidente de la Fundación Wanduk y director de la Escuela de Wayusa. Y si puedes hablar un poquito de la escuela.
Sí, mi persona siempre ha venido activamente trabajando con organizaciones ecologistas, ambientalistas. He trabajado con muchas fundaciones que buscan alternativas de desarrollo ecológico.
I've been very active working with different organizations related to ecology and the environment, different foundations, always trying to work for natural balance.
Entonces, he participado en este tipo de actividades de trabajo para buscar el mejor desarrollo ecológico, ¿no? De acuerdo a los principios indígenas.
And so I've worked in this way, always looking for the best form of development between mm-hmm. indigenous people and their surroundings, the nature around them.
Entonces, en este proceso, mi persona, mi comunidad, mi pueblo ha sido utilizado, ¿no? Por estos organismos que están dirigidos a intereses lucros, a intereses personales. Y por eso a veces yo he renunciado y he formado que se llama la Fundación Wandu Yachay, netamente para defender intereses indígenas.
And so in my experience and process of working, I've found that my community has at times been taken advantage of by mm-hmm. different organizations. And so in this way, I helped mm-hmm. to found our own foundation, our own nonprofit, which is called the Wanduk Foundation, so that we can find the best development for our community, ourselves, with nature.
Mm-hmm. Entonces la Fundación Wandu Yachay está dirigido por mi persona. Tengo varias propuestas. Entre ellos está la Escuela Guayusa, la conservación ambiental, la protección cultural, la protección espiritual, que formando consejo de ancianos de los abuelos, consejo de ancianos abuelitas y jóvenes.
And so I am now directing the Wanduk Foundation with the School of Guayusa to look for ways to share our wisdom in the best way between the grandparents and the young people.
Mm-hmm. Buscando el destino de desarrollo del mundo indígena.
Searching for the destiny of development for the indigenous world.
Con nuestro propio principio, con nuestra propia filosofía, con nuestra propia cosmovisión.
With our own principles, our own philosophy, and mm-hmm. our own cosmic vision.
And I imagine a lot of the direction comes from your elders. You work in a council and from the ancestors of the land.
Imagina que mucho de su dirección viene de los abuelos, los ancianos, que y el consejo de ustedes cómo dirigir de la tierra.
Justamente yo vengo trayendo este mensaje acá al norte.
I am coming here to the north exactly with a message related to this.
Las voces de los abuelos.
The voices of the grandparents.
Que la selva para nosotros es supermercado.
That the jungle for us is a supermarket.
Mm-hmm. Que la selva es la farmacia natural.
The jungle is a natural pharmacy.
Que la selva es una escuela, una universidad natural.
Mm-hmm. The jungle is a school, it is a natural university.
La selva es un templo.
And the jungle is a temple. Mm.
Este conceptos que los abuelos nos transmiten en conocimientos ancestrales.
These concepts with the grandparents transmit to us in ancient ways. Mm-hmm.
El respeto al agua, el respeto a los lugares sagrados, el respeto a las cascadas.
How to respect the water, how to respect the sacred places, how to respect the waterfalls.
Respeto a los árboles, a las hojas mágicas.
To respect the trees, the magic mm-hmm. leaves that exist there.
Disciplina para vivir en la tierra. Nos enseñan los abuelitos, nuestros padres.
Discipline of how to live as one with the land. Our elders, our grandparents, teach that to us.
Oh. How fortunate.
Qué fortunado.
Qué fortunado that you're working to preserve that land.
Que
and
trabajan
the teachings.
Para preservar ese terreno y las enseñanzas.
It's so important for the world.
Es muy importante para el mundo.
Our breath.
Nuestro aire.
Our lungs are, I understand that it is the, where it is the, it represents our lungs and the planet.
Que representa nuestros pulmones para todo el planeta.
The Amazon.
La Amazonía.
Por ejemplo, mi abuelo decía que en la enseñanza de la disciplina espiritual nos decía que nosotros éramos guardianes de la tierra, no éramos dueños de la tierra, que hay que proteger.
For example, my grandfather taught me when we were receiving these teachings of the forest that we are guardians of the earth and not owners of it.
Proteger los lugares sagrados.
That we must protect the sacred places.
Piedras mágicas, el oro, lugares como las cascadas, lagunas. Son aeropuertos de los espíritus.
Magic rocks, such as gold, lagoons, waterfalls. These places are sacred places and they are airports for the spirits.
Y cuando destruyen estos lugares sagrados, viene el desequilibrio de la naturaleza. Viene fenómenos naturales. Y cuando hay esos fenómenos naturales, hay muerte humana.
And when we destroy these sacred places, this brings unbalance and disequilibrium to the earth. And this leads to major events that harm people and people die.
Entonces, cuando la naturaleza, la selva, el bosque, lo amenazamos como destrucción de las empresas madereras, mineras o petroleras, eso es como paulatino genocidio humano.
And so when we threaten the earth and sacred places, such as the destruction that is happening due to oil companies and mining companies, when we pollute and destroy the earth in those ways, this leads to what we call a gradual human genocide.
Entonces la compañía Arco de los Estados Unidos, la compañía Shell llegó en los años 1915-1935, más o menos. Ellos, la compañía Arco llegó en el año 1996, destruyó territorio de mi abuelo, ¿no? Y nos preocupó mucho. Pensamos que todos los americanos eran malos.
And so the Shell company arrived in around 1915 or so. The Arco company arrived in 1996. But these are two examples of major companies that have caused great destruction in our lands. And this worries us deeply. And when this destruction occurred, first we thought that all Americans were bad.
Para mí ha sido 17 años, como 25 años para meditar, para venir aquí a los Estados Unidos, para conocer a la gente y socializar y concientizar. Pero he encontrado amigos de buen corazón. No han sido todos los americanos malos. También ha habido gente de buen corazón.
And so for me personally, I had to meditate for a number of years to be able to come to the United States and meet people and share messages and communicate with those from the North. And I learned that not everyone was bad here in the United States, that there are many people, many good-hearted people here.
La naturaleza perdona cuando las personas ya no van a destruir más. Pero si siguen destruyendo, la naturaleza va a comer. Lo ha dicho así mi abuelo.
One of the messages that we've received from our elders is that that nature forgives us when we stop our destruction of it. Nature always forgives us. But if we continue the destruction, then the earth eats us.
Entonces es importante que conozcan que nosotros aquí venimos para socializar y concientizar la conciencia espiritual, conciencia ambiental, conciencia cultural para el balance ecológico.
And this is why we come here with our messages to share about consciousness related to culture, related to the environment, related to spirituality and people, so that we can all unite and achieve balance.
Entonces, a veces los políticos en el Ecuador, ¿no?, en Sudamérica, nos dicen que somos pobres indígenas, pobrecitos, pobrecitos. Nosotros no somos pobres, somos ricos.
And so the Ecuadorian government always tries to call us poor Indians in the jungle, that we're poor and we don't have anything. But we know that we are not poor, we are very rich.
Somos ricos porque tenemos cultura, conocimiento, tenemos riqueza espiritual. Y tenemos petróleo, tenemos oro verde, que es la selva, pero nuestra riqueza están robando, están robando nuestra riqueza de nuestros territorios. Queremos decir, por favor, no.
We are rich because we have our culture, we have our people, yeah, our community, our spirituality, our medicine. We have oil in the ground where we live. But mm-hmm, there are many who are robbing our richness from yeah us.
And the school that you've, is the school running now?
Is it a function? Y la escuela de Guayusa ya está abierto.
Sí, en este momento Escuela de Guayusa está abierto. Solamente quiero decir que la Escuela Guayusa siempre vivió con mis abuelos, ¿no? Siempre vivieron con la Escuela Guayusa. Siempre vivieron con la Universidad de Guayusa. Sino que queremos, hemos olvidado por 25, 50 años. Ahora queremos retomar como jóvenes para compartir este conocimiento, esta riqueza.
The School of Guayusa is open as we speak, and I would like to say that the School of Guayusa has always been open. It's something that has existed with our ancestors and exists today, and it's just a question of something that we are starting to lose a little bit, or that some of the young people in our communities mm-hmm have been drawn away from. And so now it's just about re-strengthening the School of Guayusa mm-hmm and making a new base, a new home for it.
And
the question I have is, so you're coming to the north to bring us a message of spirituality and cultural that is land-based, is still in Ecuador. And what I keep getting from myself and from my people here in the north is that we need to wake up our spirituality and our connection to our land here, which for many of us is land that's borrowed from other indigenous people, but there's so many and our culture is so out of control. You speak of Arco and Shell in your land, and they come from the United States, but we can't control them almost. We need to get control.
That's our next guest.
Entonces, usted viene aquí con mensajes culturales y naturales, y aquí tenemos muchos problemas también que son parecidos, y bueno, algunos de nosotros nos damos cuenta que tenemos que despertarnos conscientemente y trabajar para la naturaleza. Pero cuando usted menciona compañías como Arco y Shell, esas compañías son tan grandes que nosotros mismos no sentimos que podemos controlar a ellos porque son tan grandes. Y entonces, ¿cómo podemos controlar esa destrucción y pararlo?
Solamente quiero decir cómo sentí yo cuando la Shell y la Arco, luego de hacer daños ambientales,
I would just like to share how I felt when these companies came to our lands and caused this destruction.
No hicieron estudio de impacto cultural,
they
impacto ambiental.
They didn't make any studies of cultural impact these companies would have.
Y si lo hicieron, solamente no lo socializaron a la gente.
And if they did make these studies, they certainly didn't share them with the people.
Luego de todo esto, daños ambientales, ríos de contaminación, ellos venden acciones a Italia, que es la INEAGIP. Las empresas venden y se cambian camisetas y se libran de los problemas.
So after a while of causing destruction, for example, these oil companies can destroy the rivers and the land and then mm-hmm sell their interest to mm-hmm another company. He mentions a oil company from Italy. And so in this way, the companies, they just change their T-shirts.
Yeah, the globalization.
Their uniforms, and they wash their hands of what they did.
No aceptan los errores.
They don't
solamente
accept their errors or their
falta conciencia y voluntad.
And they are missing consciousness and will to do the right thing.
Conciencia mm-hmm y voluntad humana es importante.
Consciousness and will from human people is very important.
Compartir la riqueza de extracción petrolera. Por ejemplo, en el país mío tenemos 48% de indígenas.
So in my country we have 48% of the population is indigenous.
Mm-hmm. No son beneficiarios de este recurso.
But we don't benefit at all from the resources that are extracted from these major corporations.
Nosotros queremos participar en el desarrollo.
We want to participate in
como indígenas,
the development as
con
indigenous
nuestro propio
people.
Filosofía y principio, lengua, idioma.
With our own philosophies and principles, our own languages.
Entonces, este mundo de la globalización, este mundo de desarrollo que dirige a la destrucción, no quiere compartir.
And this world of development and globalization, they don't want to share, they just want to do it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Pero mis abuelos dicen, participemos, mm-hmm. pero no permiten participar porque sabemos, nuestros abuelos que dicen, mira, nosotros no vamos a aceptar dineros que destruya la naturaleza. Muy radicalmente.
My elders have always said that we must participate in the ways that we can, but they don't want us to participate. We have principles, however, and mm-hmm. My community and my elders have always instilled in me the principle of never accepting any money from the oil companies or the mining mm-hmm. companies.
Mm-hmm. Entonces, como que el hombre hemos separado de la espiritualidad, hemos separado de la naturaleza, pero un día nos vamos, cuando ya está tarde, nos vamos a dar cuenta, se van a dar cuenta la humanidad, que ya estamos destruyendo la naturaleza, y va a estar muy tarde cuando estamos lamentando, cuando vienen fenómenos crecientes del mar, las ciudades se mueren, los humanos se mueren, ahí va a estar muy tarde cuando nos damos cuenta que estamos destruyendo la naturaleza.
And so humankind has separated itself from nature. Mm-hmm. There's been a great separation, mm-hmm. and unless we're able to reconnect ourselves, as this destruction continues, this will lead to major events such as earthquakes mm-hmm. and floods, and entire cities that may be in big trouble. And so one day we might wake up and realize all the destruction that we've been causing, and then it might be too late.
Seguramente el gobierno de mi país, Rafael Correa, está trabajando con muchos líderes indígenas.
The government of my country, with Rafael Correa, is working with many indigenous people.
Y va a escuchar mi mensaje que estoy hablando en Estados Unidos.
And he will hear my message that I am carrying and speaking in the United States.
Los petroleros llegan en la selva con perros, con militares, seguridad militar, para perforar el petróleo.
The oil companies arrive in the jungle with dogs and military backing to do their bidding there.
A los perros pagan $1,000 mensuales.
They pay the dogs $1,000 a month.
Existe presupuesto para pagar a la militarización.
These are budgets that exist for the oil companies and the
Pero
military.
Pero el gobierno mm-hmm. no se da cuenta.
But the government doesn't realize
el error de que el perro cuesta más que un humano niño campesino indígena para la educación.
The government doesn't realize the error in that a dog costs far more for them than the life of an indigenous person or a child in the jungle.
El perro, mm-hmm. el caballo que tienen en las haciendas tienen champú, tienen jabón, tienen cepillo para mm-hmm. lavar el caballo. Tienen presupuesto para eso, pero no tienen presupuesto para la educación para niños campesinos indígenas.
And mm-hmm. so the dogs, the horses that are used for the oil companies and the military, there are budgets included for them. They have shampoo and combs and nice houses to live in. And yet there are many children and people in the jungle who don't have these basic supplies.
O comprar armas, o comprar avión. Ese es el destino de un país. No. Queremos vivir en la tierra como guardianes de la tierra, protegiendo lugares sagrados, protegiendo mm-hmm. el bosque. La selva mm-hmm. es el pulmón del mundo.
And we are not in agreement with this destiny mm-hmm. that our country and our government has been steering us to. We just want to live with nature in the jungle, with our people and with our forest, protecting the forest and being happy there.
Sí, justamente yo estoy aquí para dar este mensaje, esta noticia que está pasando en la selva.
And this is why I'm here, to bring this message, to share yeah. this message from the jungle.
Yo he dicho al gobierno nacional que yo voy a hablar por 200 años más.
And I've
si
told,
no lo paran, la destrucción
I've told
de la,
my government that I will keep talking for 200 years until they stop the destruction.
Mm-hmm. La compañía Arco tiene una deuda pendiente en mi país que destruyó territorio de mi abuelo.
the Arco Company has an independent debt in my country, and they destroyed the land of my grandfather.
Yo nunca voy a olvidarme del daño ambiental que hicieron.
And I will never forget the great environmental destruction that
Había
they caused.
Loros, papagayos, pescados en los ríos.
There were many birds there, tropical birds, parrots. There were many fish in the rivers.
Pero ahora dejaron destruyendo.
But now that land has been left to destruction.
Rocas, piedras mágicas.
Magic rocks and boulders have been destroyed.
Pero vendió a las acciones a la INEAGIP y la INEAGIP no quiere solucionar nuestro problema.
And now the Arco Company has sold all of their interests to the AGIP Company from Italy, and they don't want to have anything to do with solving this problem.
So the companies are still plundering.
Entonces las compañías siguen destruyendo y robando la riqueza de la tierra.
Cuando nosotros hablamos el robo de la riqueza, no solamente es el robo, sino también es el impacto social, donde nosotros queremos decir no destrucción, no destrucción de la naturaleza. Somos encarcelados, somos perseguidos, somos torturados, a veces destruido mis casas, por ejemplo, ¿no? Con helicópteros.
It is not just the natural destruction that occurs, it is also a cultural destruction and a significant cultural impact that we feel, because when we stand up against these companies and we say no to the destruction and no to the pillaging of the land, oftentimes we are put in jail or detained by the army. They've even destroyed my own houses. They destroyed houses in my community with military helicopters.
Ni por diplomacia el gobierno pidió disculpas por esa destrucción, sabotaje a nuestra comunidad.
So for diplomacy, the government tried to ask for forgiveness for this destruction of their community.
Entonces, cuando nosotros hablamos la verdad,
and so when we speak the truth,
ellos están preocupados, ¿qué pasó?
They are worried, what happened.
Eso es historia.
But this is just history.
Si eso pasó en mi país, no quisiéramos de que siga pasando en otros continentes, en otros países.
Even though this has happened in my country, we want to make sure that this doesn't happen in other countries and other continents.
Entonces, por eso ahora nosotros hemos formado la Escuela Guayusa para enseñar el balance ecológico al mundo entero.
And so this is why we are re-strengthening and reforming the School of Guayusa to share these teachings and natural wisdom with people from around the world.
Hay otra forma de desarrollo. La selva necesita otra forma del destino, del uso y manejo de la naturaleza.
There is another form of development than what has been occurring, and another way to live and manage the forest in a way that is balanced.
Necesitamos un desarrollo milenario, no un desarrollo de una década de 25 años. Queremos un desarrollo de 1,000 años, pero hombre y la naturaleza.
We cannot continue with development of just a few decades or 25 years. We must move into a way of development that is what I call a millennium development, and developments for 1,000 years in the future.
Yo sé que cuando hablo que la selva es farmacia, muchas compañías farmacéuticas están escuchando que vamos a prohibirlo el uso y manejo de la farmacia natural.
Even when I speak about the jungle as being a pharmacy, there are companies and people who will listen to that and then think, well, we have to figure out how we can exploit this natural pharmacy.
Entonces queremos unirnos.
But we just want to unite.
Queremos compartir.
We want to share.
Nuestro conocimiento cultural y con el conocimiento científico.
Our cultural knowledge and our scientific knowledge.
Para ayudar a la humanidad.
To help humanity.
Entonces la Escuela Guayusa está apuntando a enseñar el balance ecológico con la naturaleza.
And so the School of Guayusa exists to help teach and share about ecological balance
el
between
arte,
humans and nature.
El arte, la danza, la música espiritual.
Music, dancing, art.
Los juegos tradicionales con el río, con la laguna, con la piedra, con los árboles, los
traditional
juegos de venado.
Or spiritual games that involve playing with nature, playing with the waterfalls or the lakes, the rivers, the animals, the trees.
Mi abuelo me enseñó un día en la selva, cuando yo crecía pequeñito, en los juegos tradicionales en la laguna, en el río, cómo aprender a soñar, cómo aprender a relacionar con la piedra, con el agua.
My grandfather taught me when I was little about how to learn about dreaming with the lake, playing with the lake and learning how to dream.
Eso queremos enseñar, vivir con la naturaleza.
And
gracias.
These are things that we want to teach, how to live with yeah. Mother Nature.
Yeah. See, I have had nightmares about the destruction of the Amazon years ago.
Yo he tenido pesadillas sobre la destrucción de la naturaleza hace años.
Observe dreams. So I'm learning how to dream something that is going to protect it and preserve it.
Estoy
in its natural state with the people having
algo
control.
Cómo proteger la naturaleza con los humanos como guardianes de eso.
And that's been my dream.
Y eso ha sido mi sueño.
You and Casimiro have answered that.
Y usted y Casimiro han respondido de eso.
But you need much help.
Pero también necesitan ayuda.
So what can we do to help? What websites and visit the school?
Entonces, ¿qué podemos hacer para ayudar? Páginas web, visitar la escuela.
Sí, nosotros, por ejemplo, en el año 1940 hubo la privatización en nuestro país de la reforma, de la colonización de la reforma agraria.
In 1940, there was a program through the government about colonization and agricultural reform.
Entonces el gobierno colonizaba los territorios indígenas, ¿no? Iban robando nuestras tierras.
And so the government in this way colonized the indigenous territories and robbed us of our lands.
Y territorios grandes formándose parques nacionales.
And large territories were formed into national parks.
Entonces ahora están privatizando agua, privatizando lugares sagrados, privatizando áreas arqueológicas.
And so they continue to privatize sacred places where we, our ancestors, held ceremonies, places of nature, and they deny us access to those
Entonces,
places.
Entonces, nosotros como indígenas queremos proteger lugar sagrado, que es 300 acres, en zona accesible para poder... Sí, 300acres.com es la dirección.
So in this way, we are working to recuperate these ancestral lands and to save them and protect them. And right now, we are currently recuperating 300 acres of ancestral land for the School of Wayusa, and we have a website to help us do that. The website is 300acres.com.
Solo queremos recuperar y proteger para nuestro desarrollo.
We just want to recuperate and protect for our indigenous development, our indigenous people.
Para compartir con los jóvenes abuelos del mundo entero.
And also to share with young people and old people from around the world.
Entonces la cooperación, el apoyo de jóvenes, niños o abuelos de California es bienvenido. Un granito de arena, un centavo para unir esta fuerza y recuperar este bosque, este lugar sagrado.
And the cooperation and support of our friends here in the north and in California is much appreciated. Anything that people can do to help, even if it's just giving 1 cent to this project, will help us greatly.
Entonces, yo acabo de conocer a los amigos de aquí de California, de Oregon, he visitado para conversar.
And I've been meeting many friends here in California and Oregon.
Great.
Personas de California, mi observación, personas de California hay más conciencia ambiental que en otros estados como Washington D.C., Texas, un paso muy gigante.
One observation that I've made here is that there is a high level of consciousness in California related to nature, and that people here are more aware and conscious of protecting nature than in other states that I've visited around the U.S.
He visitado organizaciones ambientalistas, por ejemplo, de que protegen la naturaleza. Son más mujeres que hombres.
I've also noticed that in visiting different organizations related to protecting the environment, that there are more women working for this cause than
son
men.
Son mis observaciones, nomás.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's the mother, la madre.
Sí, quiero despedir. Quiero despedir con una quenita a, la, a los amigos sí. que escuchan. Y
this is what I, oh, you, I, what I see or feel is one of the problems that we have in the North is that we don't have a cultural identity past our own individual life. So you talk of a 1,000-year development plan. Most people in my country are thinking only of their life. And have no belief system that ties in with the creator and life beyond this individual body. And this is where the illness or dis-ease comes from, because we're so focused only on ourselves, and much fear comes from that.
Miedo.
Usted habla de un desarrollo millonario, y me doy cuenta que en nuestro país la mayoría de la gente aquí no piensan en un desarrollo o en las cosas que siguen más de su vida, su propia vida. No piensan por el futuro más de eso, solamente su vida ahora. Y ahí viene la enfermedad de los humanos, que no estamos conscientes de nuestros impactos y los futuros generaciones.
Sí, los abuelitos, por ejemplo, es importante a los niños no separar de los abuelos, como en otros países. Por ejemplo, en la escuela Guayusa queremos unir abuelos, abuelitas con los niños, hablando historia, hablando mitología, hablando leyendas, para que los niños del futuro tengan suficiente información sobre la naturaleza.
And so with the school of Guayusa, we want to work in a way that helps to solve that problem by sharing mythology and stories and the ancestral ways with the young people, not just from our communities but from around the world, so that we can all help to reconnect with nature and those that came before us.
Dreaming together as well.
Soñando juntos, quizás es.
Sí, eso es alimentarse del conocimiento del abuelo, el secreto de la naturaleza, ¿no?
And in this way, nourishing ourselves with the knowledge of the ancestors and the secrets of nature.
Entonces, en la escuela Guayusa está orientado a ese desarrollo verdadero, ¿no?
And so the school of Guayusa is oriented to this true development, this natural development.
Entonces, aquí estoy para pedir solidaridad, apoyo. Está aquí mi amigo que traduce justo representante aquí en los Estados Unidos. Yo ya mismo regreso, voy a seguir hablando un mes más y yo regreso, pero está bienvenido. Yo dejo la dirección, que es escueladeguayusa.or.com.
And so this is why I'm here, is to share these messages and to also to speak about our school, the School of Guayusa, and to invite everyone to come and visit the school. We have some friends here in the north, such as my translator, Justin, who will help to coordinate groups and people who have questions about the school. And I'd like to share the website of the school. It is schoolofguayusa.com. Guayusa is spelled G-U-A-Y-U-S-A. And we invite everyone to come to our school and to share these teachings and to share in nature there.
Thank you. I feel that we're on a rapid path of destruction, and what you're doing can truly avert that.
Siento que estamos en un camino muy veloz de destrucción, y que el proyecto que ustedes están trabajando puede terminar y negar que no llegamos a esa destrucción.
Posiblemente muchas religiones pueden estar en contra de esta escuela, pero más bien queremos unir con las religiones, unir con los militares, unir con los policías, unir con la sociedad, para que busquemos el mejor camino. Escuela Guayusa es una semilla pequeña que estamos poniendo, pero va a estar rodeado de muchas compañías de destrucción, ¿no? Que no van a estar de acuerdo con nuestro desarrollo.
The School of Guayusa may have different groups or even religions that are against what it is trying to do, but we just want to unite with everyone, unite mm-hmm. with all the religions that exist, unite with all the governments, unite with mm-hmm. all the companies that the mm-hmm. military, everyone. Mm-hmm. We want unity, and so the School of Wayusa is like a small seed mm-hmm. that is being planted yeah. in the ground,
but
that
it
will grow.
Sprouts.
It sprouts, and he says that. It will grow and grow, although it will be surrounded by many threats and destruction that will continue. The School of Wayusa will still grow.
I believe it will touch those of like mind and heart.
Siente que va a tocar las personas que tienen mente y corazón similar de ese mensaje.
Sí, justamente, por ejemplo, saludo a mis hermanos indígenas de Norteamérica o de Canadá y de otros continentes, a todos los hermanos indígenas que lucharon, que vivieron con esta preocupación.
Mm. Yes, and I would also like to send a message out to all my brothers and sisters, my indigenous friends and brothers from the north, from the south, and all over the world, everyone that has felt this destruction or this worry of what is happening to the earth. I want to send this message out to them and to mm-hmm. to salute them worldwide.
Uno de los puntos es unirse indígenas del norte y del sur para Águila el Cóndor que se está buscando.
Sí.
And one of the points of this
condor
project is to unite the north and the south, the eagle and the condor.
Algo estábamos hablando de antes sobre el secreto del águila, por ejemplo. Cuando hay una águila que come una culebra venenosa. Esta águila que come absorbe el veneno de la culebra y esta águila se transforma en una medicina para el humano, para la enfermedad de epilepsia, para artritis. Entonces, ahí hay un secreto que al animal nosotros no matamos porque queremos matar, sino sacrificamos para la medicina de nuestros hijos.
So, an example or a metaphor for what is happening is one of our medicines in the jungle, a special eagle that eats the most venomous snakes in all the jungle. And that eagle converts the venom of those snakes in its body to medicine. And for people with arthritis or epilepsy and other sicknesses, that medicine of the eagle can help to cure them. But we don't kill this eagle just for the fun of it or just for the action of it. We only sacrifice this animal for its medicine when it is needed mm-hmm. and when it is most necessary.
Entonces comienza a funcionar bien la sangre, ¿no? Las venas de la sangre en el cerebro, en el cuerpo. Entonces el niño, el joven, está muy activamente.
And this special medicine, when taken in the right way, it helps our blood throughout our body to flow, to be healthy and clean, for all the channels to open, for our minds to be clear, for our bodies to be healthy and clean, and for young people to have a balance of heart and mind and spirit.
Wayusa no es una planta alucinógena. Wayusa es un té que tomaron los abuelitos por cientos y cientos de años.
I would also like to clarify that Wayusa, the tea that we drink every morning and that the school is named after, is not a hallucinogenic tea. It's a tea that our ancestors have taken for many, many generations, and mm-hmm. it helps keep the mind clear and alert.
Mm-hmm. Muchas gracias por escuchar y muchas gracias que escuchan nuestro mensaje de la selva, los amigos que escuchan esta radio emisora.
Oh, many thanks for listening, and I would also like to thank all of the people who hear this program and have listened to my message here. Many thanks for having me.
Many thanks for having you come here and share with us so much of the wisdom and the music and
muchas gracias por venir y por compartir el mensaje, la cultura, la música.
Sí, quiero despedir con esta música.
I would just like to say goodbye with a little bit of music.
Yeah.
pairuna hana 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 urai 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 moyo 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 mundo 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 ta urku urku apa ya ya shu. Gracias.
Gracias. Thank you so much for coming up here and sharing so much of your culture, your tradition,
tantas
your
gracias
wisdom,
por venir aquí
teachings.
Por compartir tanto de su cultura y su gente, sus enseñanzas.
In your heart.
Y su corazón.
Thank you.
Sí.
Gracias.
Hay cantos muy espirituales, muy sagrados para todos los sí. humanidad.
Thank you. There are very sacred songs that yeah. exist around the world for us and the earth.
Thank you. And the websites, once more, before you
Thank
go,
you.
So people can get in touch with you and assist.
So the first website is 300acres.com. That's 300acres.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a website that our great friend Natalie Villalobos from Google has helped to build for Flavio and his community, and to help raise the money for the 300 acres of ancestral land that they are currently purchasing for the School of Wayusa. And we actually only have about 3 weeks left to raise the rest of that money, or it will be sold to another group. So please check that out at 300acres.com. And the School of Wayusa's website is schoolofwayusa.org. Wayusa, once again, is spelled G-U-A-Y-U-S-A. And that site has lots of information about the school itself and the community and about visiting there, what sorts of things take place, workshops that will be coming up and different classes and things like that.
Great. That you all can attend also and visit.
Yes, young people, old people from every country are invited to the School of Wayusa.
Thank you for that invitation, too, and thank you again.
Gracias por la invitación y gracias otra vez por estar aquí.
And stay in touch and let us know what's going on in the community, and we'll continue to share it
y que
with our audience.
En contacto para que sigan sabiendo qué está pasando allá y con la comunidad y sus proyectos.
Sí, una vez más.
Sí.
Agradezco a esta emisora y a los que escuchan, su solidaridad, apoyo es importante para comprar esta 300acres.com que estamos luchando.
And I'm just so thankful to be here and for our host and for allowing us to share this message with everyone. And once again, please visit 300acres.com if you have the chance.
Thank you.
Sí, porque en el futuro temprano, si logramos recuperar este lugar sagrado, queremos invitar a como 2,000 indígenas de diferentes partes en Sudamérica para jugar nuestros juegos tradicionales.
And if we're able to recuperate this land, one of our great
Three
visions
weeks.
Is to have meetings and gatherings of communities to unite local communities, indigenous communities throughout Ecuador and also throughout South America, and even to have gatherings of 2,000 or 3,000 indigenous people to come and unite with our spiritual games, our traditional games, have a place where we can have councils and have medicine people and young people and old people from all around South America come for these traditional games.
And this land is very sacred, and the vision that you're holding out for it.
Y este terreno
is truly
es muy sagrado y la visión que toman.
Yeah. Gracias. Sí,
gracias. And let us know when you return.
Y avisa cuando vuelvas.
Gracias. Sí.
Gracias. Thank you.
Muchas gracias.
Wow, this was Flavio. Justin, thank you so much for translating. You're traveling together, I guess, constantly.
We are.
You're his official translator.
We're on a whirlwind tour right now. It's been Lots of fun.
Hi, and you're from Massachusetts, so am I. We talked about that.
Yes, originally from the East Coast.
The circles just continue. Yeah. And you've been to Indian Canyon, one of my favorite places.
También
as well.
Ha sido a Indian Canyon, que un lugar preferido de ella, que le gusta mucho.
Sí, me gustó mucho y participé en la sauna. He compartido con Maestro Martín.
Yes,
muchos saludos a Martín y a otros líderes indígenas, que estoy llevando un recuerdo muy, muy bonito para la selva. Ahora hemos formado un equipo. Eso demuestra que ya estamos participando, ¿no? Equipo indígena de la selva, equipo jóvenes de americanos, cooperación. Estamos avanzando en esta búsqueda de desarrollo de la Escuela Wayusa.
Yes, I've been to Indian Canyon on many occasions, and I do a sweat lodge there with Martin, who
I've been there with Martin too.
And this is a great example of our connecting between indigenous people from the south and from the north, and sharing and reconnecting in those ways. So I'm very happy to have that connection.
And Anne Marie Sayers.
Y Ana María Sayers.
Sí, Ana María Sayers.
Very dear to me. She's been on the show.
También que ha estado en el programa. Y
sí, yo agradezco mucho también a Ana María. Abuelita muy buena, de corazón grande, que también necesitan ayuda, que necesitan apoyo para parar su árbol sagrado. Y también hago un llamado a los amigos de aquí, de este estado, que solidaricen también a la gente que necesita vivir en este mundo espiritual, ¿no? En su territorio, con su tierra, con su Pachamama.
Sí, Pachamama, su tierra, allí.
I'm also very thankful to know Anne Marie and for her friendship and all her support and the amazing things that she's done for my project. And I would also like to mention that she is also helping to raise funds to raise a sacred medicine pole that they have at Indian Canyon, that they need some help from other folks to help them raise enough money to raise that pole. So if anyone listening would like to help with that project, please get in touch with Anne Marie Sayers at Indian Canyon.
Thank you. Well, again, gracias. To get on to our next guest, I could have you here. I just looked at the clock. I'm shocked.
Que está muy agradecida que estamos aquí y que podríamos seguir.
Political process, and this is one of the central problems in our democracy today.
Allah, Allah, Allah. in Lakesh, in Lakesh, in Lakesh, Eshkia Mama.
I'm always playing that. Well, I'm real excited about our second guest. This is Barry C. Lynn. He is the author of the recently published Cornered, The New Monopoly, Capitalism and Economics of Destruction. It's amazing. He explains the perils given the power of these predatory giants. And he writes, they control governments, the courts, war and peace, dominant information sources, and essential services, including healthcare, air and water, what we eat, drink, where we live, what we wear, and the school curricula to the highest levels. They own our genetic code patents, basic human life elements to be commodified, the same as toothpaste, tomatoes, or toilet paper. Everything is impacted by the control of monopolies. I had no idea. It was a real eye-opener when I read this book. I thought I knew everything about monopolies, but he really unearthed so much information, really didn't leave any stones unturned. And let me make sure he's online with us. Barry Lynn, are you with us?
Hello?
Hi, there you are. There. I just introduced you, and I'm curious what your background is a little bit more, how you became involved in doing this research.
I'm getting all kinds of interference.
Oh, you are?
My cell phone is 202-431-6066. That works better.
There, is that better?
Hello?
Can you hear now?
Yeah, I can now barely hear you.
Oh, dear. I wonder what's going on. I hear you fine. Do you hear something?
No, you're going in and out. It's like all kinds of interference.
Can you hear me now? Or is it still being interfered?
Give us a minute.
My cell phone works pretty well. It's 202-431-6066.
There. Is it any better now? Whoops.
You're just going in and out.
Oh, okay, let me get your other number.
202-431. What's the rest of the number, Barry?
It's 202.
Barry?
202.
Yeah. Go ahead.
431.
Mm-hmm.
6066.
6066. Okay, we can try that.
I'll call you back on that line.
Why is the music still on the screen?
Oh, it's not the music.
Okay, all right. Yeah, one of the aspects of what Flavio was talking about and having entities like Shell and Arco heavily impact the jungle in Ecuador, I'm certain tie in with the monopoly of oil that perhaps Barry can elucidate a bit on. And it does strike me that one of the aspects, I mean, there's two aspects that go on in our culture that I perceive, being a native of the United States culture, that either we're absorbed with ourselves and our own individual lives to the extent that almost it doesn't matter how we affect the long term, or alternatively, there's a belief that this world doesn't really matter, that what's actually important is where we go next. And it strikes me that the Creator, whatever term you'd like to put upon that energy that brought this all into being, brought us all into being, certainly wouldn't create something that meant nothing. In other words, it is very important to pay attention to and to take care of the earth. And it is a big challenge for us in our country to come back to actually having a working relationship with Mother Earth. We're so separated from all, even our food sources. I mean, how many of us actually take part in putting the food on our table? And there is one place where every time we eat, every time I sit down at the table, I do try to remember that. If I say every, it's certainly not true, but most of the time before I eat, I give blessing and thanks for the power that made the food and all the many hands that brought the food to my table. And this in and of itself can be a way of awakening that connection to Mother Earth.
Yes.
And all the energy that surrounds us, which has taken care of us all the days of our life and will continue doing so. And very important to help out in any way we can with indigenous cultures that still have direct connection to the nature on the bit of earth that they live on, particularly Flavio's community down in Ecuador.
I believe we have Barry Lynn on the line now. Are you with us, Barry?
Yes, it's great to be there tonight.
Oh, yes, this is a much clearer connection. I just want to give you another brief introduction. You're the Director of Markets Enterprise and Resiliency Initiative, and also a senior fellow at the New American Foundation. And you're the author of Too Big to Fail, and most recently Cornered, The New Monopoly, Capitalism, and Economics of Destruction. And boy, you really turned my mind around about monopolies and just how destructive they are and dangerous to our democracy in so many ways. And I'm curious, I just want to begin by asking you a little bit about your background and how you began exploring corporations in this way and how they
Basically, I've been a journalist covering international business and various forms of finance for about 26 years now. And I lived abroad for a long time. I actually worked in Peru for the Associated Press, and worked in Venezuela and the Caribbean for Agence France-Presse. And that's where I started really looking at international systems. And one of the And then through the 1990s, I read a magazine that was called Global Business Magazine. Mm-hmm. And with Global Business Magazine, what I really then got into is understanding how corporations were put together, sort of the organization inside of these large corporations, how they did their business around the world in terms of where they made things, how they moved components from place to place. And so, you know, basically, after the way I actually got into what I'm doing now is that by the late 1990s, I started to notice something kind of strange in the way that industrial systems were organized. And what I noticed is that there was this massive concentration that was taking place in where things were being produced.
Mm-hmm.
And by that I mean, like, certain types of semiconductors, which had been, you know, made, say, all over the world, were being, the production was being concentrated in one or two places.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, one of these places was, like, Hsinchu, this industrial zone in Taiwan. Or the same thing was happening in the chemical industry. But the same thing was happening in, you know, in electronics components, or even information processing. Certain mm-hmm. kinds of information was being processed, like, in certain places in South India. And there's a problem. You know, we've all heard the old saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket, and the same
yes.
is true for industrial systems.
Yeah.
When you put all your eggs in one basket or all your semiconductors in one city, if there is some kind of a major event, if there's a giant earthquake there, if there's
yeah.
some kind of a political disaster, then you can have something called an industrial crash. And we've actually seen a few industrial crashes
yes.
recently. We saw one in Taiwan in 1999. We saw one in Japan in 2007. We saw one in the United States after September 11, when suddenly these large industrial systems just stopped working. So anyway, that's how I got into this. And then I said, you know, so my last book was essentially about that issue.
Uh-huh.
And then what happened with, so after the last book, which was called End of the Line, I said, you know, this issue of monopolization, you know, too big to fail is a really, really big issue, but there's even other issues beyond that. It's the, you know, political issues and, you know, do we in the United States have the freedom to engage in you know, open up businesses?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have, you know, as workers, you know, the kind of power that's arrayed against us? So anyway, I did this other book called
mm-hmm.
Cornered, which just came out. And,
yes.
Yeah, and it's like an untold story. I was surprised. I was really baffled by the fact that no one's looked at this issue in 30-plus years. This is a huge revolution.
Yeah, it is. And I've had to rethink how I even evaluate the economy. It's just been a whole expose of the lack of competition and what competition really means. And we compete among ourselves, but the large monopolies certainly don't. They've sewn up all the idea of free market, too, and the term free market. They've robbed us of our language.
No, you're absolutely right. And I mean, and you just actually said something really important. Because we walk around and we, you know, people tell us, oh, there's competition here. And absolutely, there's competition between us, the people.
Right.
You know, it's like these, you know, when there's
little.
A job out there, we compete to get the job. But the real big powers out there, you know, the people who own the large industrial corporations, the large retailers, they don't compete for our sake.
No.
And so, you know, basically there's been, once, you know, 30 years ago in this country, we had a true open market system. We had competition at all levels. We had this great economy that, you know, you could go out and start your own farm, start your own business really easily. We were served as, you know, well as consumers. And it's all been, you know, they told us that there's this thing called the free market,
yeah.
and you know, basically over the last 30 years, what essentially sort of adopted this free market ideology, all that's happened is that basically every single one of our markets just about has been closed.
Yes. And the illustrations that you gave in your book, I think you used the eyeglass industry. You think you're going to purchase eyeglasses competitively at Pearle Vision, Sears, but they're all owned by just one Italian corporation. That's just one market, one example of a product And then the supplies are all from one central supplier. And then the impact of Walmart. I mean, there's so much that you wrote about.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, the U.S. economy, this is a nation of 300 million people. And we had this incredibly robust, incredibly diversified economy. And, there's just, since they overturned our anti-monopoly laws, and just to do a little bit of, backing and filling here, what happened, because people are not even aware of what happened. And, for 200 years in this country, our anti-monopoly laws were one of our most important sets of laws, perhaps the most important set, because our anti-monopoly laws, we use them to protect ourselves against concentration of economic power, because concentration of economic power usually means concentration of political power. So we don't want that. We never wanted that in the past. We use anti-monopoly laws to break up concentrations of power. Mm-hmm. And it worked. We started even before the revolution. We started in 1773. The Boston Tea Party was properly understood. It was an anti-monopoly action. People did not want the British East India Company to monopolize trade in tea. They're actually offering very cheap tea, and we said, no, we don't want the cheap tea. We want freedom of commerce. So 200 years, that's what we did, and then what happened in 1981, when the Reagan administration first came to power, they said, you know what? The purpose of our anti-monopoly laws, let's change them. Let's not use them to protect us as citizens. So let's use them to help us out as consumers.
So they didn't actually enforce them, but they were still on the books. Isn't that what you wrote about?
Yeah, well, basically what happened is, as soon as you say, okay, when it's like, when you're a citizen and you're using your anti-monopoly laws to protect you as a citizen, what citizens want is liberty. We want liberty from concentrated power.
Yes.
We want liberty from fellow citizens using things like corporations to fence us, to take away our properties. Mm-hmm. That's what you, when you're, but then when you sort of get redefined as a consumer, then you say, oh gosh, what do I want? I want stuff. I want big piles of cheap stuff.
Supposedly.
So then what happened is they just kind of used that little sleight of hand and said, and basically, instead of like saying, we're going to basically put into every single market in the United States, we're going to ensure that there's real competition. Nowadays, we're going to have, what we want to do is pile up the goods, and we want to, and the way to do that is to like create efficiencies. Well, we're going to accept monopoly anywhere where the monopolist can make a case that they're going to like lower the price and service as consumers. So for 30 years now, anytime anyone said, I want to create a merger, or I want to destroy my competitor, and then and they say, well, that's not a good thing. And you say, well, I'm going to deliver cheaper stuff to the American consumers. They say, okay, that's fine.
Cheaper or efficient? Aren't those code words that have been used, bantied about? Efficiency and free market and that have no real meaning other than profit producing. It's sort of
efficiency is a really, really, in any kind of political discussion, the word efficiency is a really dangerous word. The word efficiency is the word that dictators use to justify centralization, concentration of power in their own hands.
Absolutely.
That's what Louis Couture said. It's like, if you just concentrate all power in my hand, then if I will just think and actions will happen, it will be amazingly efficient, there won't be any waste energy. And you know what? There's also no freedom. There's no freedom of thought.
Yes.
And this has happened in this country in the late 19th century when Rockefeller ended up rolling up control over just about the entire oil industry in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Or J.P. Morgan rolled up control over Wall Street in the hands of one man. And then people would say, well, that's not a good idea. And they said, oh, you know what? Competition is wasteful. We don't want to have competition. It's wasteful. We need to have all power concentrated in my hand so I can deliver you better stuff, more stuff. But what they also delivered was a collapse in these systems mm-hmm. of democracy, mm-hmm. a collapse of opportunity. And then also these people ended up basically, in some cases, controlling just about the government. And, you know, once you have that kind of concentration of power, fascism. These people become the government.
Yes. And that's what, again, what we have today. And you explained it historically by saying that when Milton Friedman started writing about the free market and what that really meant, it took away the checks and balances. Could you say a little bit about that for our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, the
that were in place.
Yeah, because checks and balances, you know, we understand the value of checks and balances in our political
yes.
system.
But
you know,
in
that
the economic
we have
system.
Different. You know, the executive and the courts and the legislature all sort of competing for power in a sense and jealously guarding their mm-hmm. own prerogatives, and that's a good thing. And the and when you have anti-monopoly law, one of the purposes of anti-monopoly law is to ensure that in our political economy we have checks and balances, we have competition, we have different companies that are kind of keeping a jealous eye on each other and saying, oh, that mm-hmm. guy is cheating. Or these people are, like, polluting, and that's not fair. So it's like when you apply your competition policy, your anti-monopoly law as well, then the regulation becomes part of the system. You don't have to regulate from the center power, from the government. The people out in the system will regulate each other. They'll point fingers at each other because you see. And so what you've done is you've actually created a form of separation of powers in the political economy. And you've also ensured that these people will not be able to combine their powers and take over the government. So that's, you know,
right.
the fantastic thing about anti-monopoly law is that it's a form of, it's taking the concepts, the principles of separation of powers, of checks and balances, and applying it to our political economy.
And
that's what's so awful about having allowed these people to overthrow those laws.
And the smaller corporations were too small to take down the whole system if one failed.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's like,
this is a
disaster on so many levels.
I couldn't begin with this.
Yeah, but it's also a disaster in the sense of the dangers that this poses mm-hmm. for us in terms of, you know, having these crashes that I was mentioning before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we saw it in the financial system. In September of 2008, when Lehman Brothers went down, we almost saw a catastrophic collapse of the whole system because mm-hmm. basically these guys had tied together all of the banks in a way that if one goes down, they all go down. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just crazy. Bad engineering.
And that's now true of the auto industry as well, and
exactly.
so many of our. And you mentioned Walmart and just the colossal, almost monstrous control that it has over the producers and the suppliers over so much of our economic activity.
Yeah, I mean, it's
with
the automotive industry, we've seen the same thing happen, mm-hmm. which is that you know, you go out to buy a car, and you got all these different companies offering you different cars. There's like more than 100 different models of car available in the United States. 1 in 10 big companies offering you cars. It seems to be incredibly competitive. What we found out when General Motors went bankrupt, we found out that after these companies had outsourced all their production, you know, like they used to make their own windshield wipers, they used to make their own alternators. And then during the 1990s and 2000s, they started to, like, basically take those operations and turn them over to outside companies. Well, then monopolists came in and grabbed control of, say, you know, all the windshield wipers or all the piston rings or all of a certain kind of alternator. And then what happens is that it's essentially a type of communalization of the supply base. So even in the automotive industry, which we think is, like, the most cowboy capitalistic of all of our industrial systems,
yeah.
You know, and every time you turn on the Super Bowl, you're seeing all these different advertisements for all these different cars. They've actually now communalized the supply base. And let me emphasize that. They've communalized the supply base,
wow.
and they have socialized their financial risk. That's what these guys did. Communalized these operations and socialized their financial risk.
Is that the language that they use, or is that the language that you're using in observing what transpired, Barry?
That's the language that I use, but I'm going to actually, there's other people have used this for the financial system.
I mean,
and it's like none other than Mr. Larry Summers,
mm-hmm.
after the collapse of Lehman Brothers,
mm-hmm.
what he did back when he was on the outside, when he wasn't in power, he said, and he was shocked. I mean, and he said, "What? Oh my God! These guys have a social. What they've done is they privatized all the profit in the system, mm-hmm. and they socialized all the risk."
There you go. That's
if it's good enough for Larry Summers, it's good enough language for me.
Yeah, the reason I was asking is because that kind of language is so antithetical to what's put forth by the government in any kind of social programs. It's all privatization and take care of yourself. But
you're on your own. That's like for us, mm-hmm. us little folks.
Mm-hmm.
Accountability is for us.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the whole game of socialization in any, we live in society, so there's a lot of things that are socialized. I mean, that's just a fact.
Mm-hmm.
And, we shouldn't necessarily use the word socialization as an epithet, but the whole thing is basically, the whole game of politics is, as far as I understand it, when you boil it down is, well, my team, what I want is to make your team eat your losses, and I want to socialize my own losses.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys have played the game pretty well. It's like we have to face the facts. Our financiers are socialists when it comes to their own risk.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done a marvelous job of socializing their own risk.
Were the anti-monopoly laws actually overturned and thrown out, or were they just ignored or not enforced? When did this? You said 1981 is when Reagan got into power, things started changing in that way.
Yeah, what they did is they rather than going to actually overthrow the laws, because that would have riled up the Congress. People would have said, "Oh my God, something's going on here. We don't understand it necessarily, but we don't trust Reagan. We're not going to allow this to happen." Instead of actually overthrowing the laws, what they did is they changed the frame
mm-hmm.
that they used to determine whether there's a harm that's being caused. So before, they used to have this frame that was, well, competition for the sake of competition. We just need to have competition in the system because that's how you keep markets open. That's how you ensure that people do not combine and take over the government. And that was the old frame. And then what they did is they put in this new frame, and they call it the consumer welfare frame. And I'll tell you, it's very important for us to understand, it wasn't only the Reaganites that sort of did this. They had help from the consumer movement, mm-hmm. people that we would regard as being on the progressive side. These guys, there's a lot of guys who said, there's a lot of people actually who believe that, efficiency really is the best way to create, create the most amount of stuff. So when the Reaganites came out and said, this is what we're going to do, there was a decent number of folks on what we might call the left who said, okay, that's actually a pretty good idea.
Hmm.
But then they just changed the frame. They didn't actually throw the law out.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Well, I just want to say that one of the things that I noticed, I spent a lot of time in lumber yards. Almost nothing is made in the States anymore, from hardware to tools. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And even if one wants to buy and thereby support my fellow citizens, United States workers, it's almost impossible to mm-hmm. find things that are made in the States anymore. And this has all happened within the last, 15 years.
Yeah, it's really, exactly, 10, 15 years. It's really, absolutely, it's happened since the passage of the approval of the Uruguay round of GATT, which was late 94. The WTO system went into effect in 95. In the United States, this massive stripping out of production capacity has taken place essentially since 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And It's really phenomenal, and this is actually a classic thing when you have these, when you allow these trading companies to rise up and dominate your marketplace, own your marketplace. It means that when there's no competition whatsoever, mm-hmm. it makes it much easier for them to go abroad and basically buy the cheapest thing mm-hmm. and just bring it in. The quality doesn't matter. You know, the safety of the product really doesn't matter, and that's why we see things like this pet food fiasco a couple mm-hmm. years back.
Because
we don't make. We used to make all chemicals that we consumed in this country. We used to make all of the additives, the food additives, all the content in our drugs was made in this country. But now these giant companies that control these things, they just buy it from whoever in China is offering the cheapest stuff. Because what they want to do is buy, they want to maximize the spread. So they want to use their power to raise their prices to us. Mm-hmm. And they want to buy what's absolutely cheapest out there and pocket the difference. And what's phenomenal in this country is in cases like vitamin C, we discovered in this country, it was an American scientist who first isolated what vitamin C is, identified what it is. And then there was an American company that first figured out how to synthesize it.
Yes.
It was an American company that first figured out how to mass produce vitamin C. Right now in this country, 100% of our vitamin C comes from, this is ascorbic acid, which is also used for preserving foods. 100% comes from China.
Oh, no.
100%.
That's
and it's
amazing.
True, like the content of our drugs, we're talking about upwards of 80%, probably closer to 90% of the content of our drugs comes from China.
Now, what was this process of gobbling up so many small companies that were also manufacturing ascorbic acid or parts for automobiles? And can you go into that a little bit, the process of assimilation and then buying other companies, competitors, and then dismantling them sometimes?
Well, like a perfect example. There's a thing called a roll-up strategy. And I know about this because when I was in the business of running a magazine in the 1990s, you know, I spent 7 years helping to run a magazine. We made all our money out of the marketplace from subscriptions and from advertising. You know, I understand entrepreneurial operations as well as anyone else. While I was there, there's actually a lot of money out there from these guys on Wall Street. If I come up with what we used to call a roll-up strategy, mm-hmm. that means I'm going to figure out how to like buy up a bunch of other magazines and control them in one place. So I actually took part in one of these things back in the 1990s. But it's not just magazines. They've done this with, say, plumbing operations, where like guy on Wall Street would give a bunch of money to one guy who has like a plumbing brand, and then he will go out and buy plumbing operations in 200 cities across the United States and really kind of become a power in plumbing. So, or it could be in trash collection or in baking. You know, what these guys do is they take a pile of money in a corporation and they go out and they just buy a bunch of independent companies and turn them into a single giant power. And not everyone grows that way. Actually, like Walmart grew to power without buying other companies. But if you want to get to scale quickly, the fastest way to get to scale quickly is just to... Actually, Whole Foods did this. There were a bunch of companies that were kind of like Whole Foods, and then Whole Foods just bought them within like a couple of 2 year period.
And then one of my favorite ice cream companies, Ben and Jerry's, was purchased, and then Odwalla. They all inevitably seem to be swallowed up. Is it that they can't get their product to market?
Yeah.
On
I mean,
the shelves?
Those are great examples. I mean, also like, say, Tom's Toothpaste. Everyone
yeah,
goes out
was,
and they buy Tom's
favorites.
Toothpaste. And it's like, Tom's is owned by Colgate-Palmolive for the last 5 years.
You're kidding me.
Oh, no. What happens... These guys own the trucks, they own the shelves, you know, the big guys. And like in toothpaste, two companies control almost all the toothpaste, Colgate, Palmolive, and Procter & Gamble. And they actually cooperate in most of their marketplaces. They go, it's this thing called category management. They basically exchange information on pricing, on shelving decisions. And it, they don't do it directly. They do it through retailers like Walmart.
Yeah.
And so then essentially these two companies are essentially, for all intents, they're acting like one company. And if you're an, if you're not part, so they control like 80%+ of that, maybe 85%, 90%. If you're one of the little tiny companies around the edge, it's really hard to compete when you've got these this government that's essentially deciding everything that has to do with toothpaste or toothbrushes or shavers or whatever it is. I mean, it's like you go up and down the aisles, it's the same thing. So if you're small, you're gonna, you know, it's like there's just no way that you can actually continue to make money in this kind of situation.
I know. And you, on page 43 in your book, you have a list of what P&G controls. More than 75% of men razors, about 60% of laundry detergent, and on and on. And they, in turn, are controlled by Walmart, which control, I guess, gives certain companies the right to shelve products, which I found shocking, to actually determine what goes on the shelves from other companies as well. Is that true? Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, no, is that you, you've understood it perfectly. I mean, it is shocking because back in the old days when you were, when you had, say, where every place where there's now a Walmart, say there used to be an independent discount store. Back when you had those independent discount stores, it was the local store would decide all of its shelving decisions. You know, we're going to buy this much of this product, this much of this, and we're going to put it here, and we're going to devote this much shelving to it. And it was their decision, and it was based on, often it was like, this is what the local people like. We're trying to serve our local customers, our neighbors. And now, nowadays, Walmart is so powerful. I mean, you know, they control upwards of 30%, 40%, in some cases 50% of certain lines of business in this country. So they, because of that, they basically control all of the suppliers. You know, it's like no company, like a, you know, a company like Procter & Gamble, you can't not, you know, get go through Walmart to get to your customers. So they essentially control these folks. And so like Walmart basically says, okay, we're kind of in a symbiotic relationship. So, rather than us figuring out how to put stuff on shelf, you guys figure it out. You work together. You know, you get back to us. It'll be more efficient for all of us. It, you know, but it's more efficient in the way the Soviet Union was efficient.
Yes. So the smaller producers of, say, toothpaste don't have a chance. They cannot sell their product. Instead, we're stuck with toothpaste from China, or it's usually poisonous. And a lot of, and you know, and that brings me back. I had emailed to you about Toyota and all the accidents and the malfunctioning suddenly of a lot of the Toyota vehicles, and they used to be so highly esteemed. Do you think that's attributable to the single supplier that many of the auto companies are now using that you wrote about?
Well, we actually saw a case in which the, it turned out that this pedal mechanism that Toyota's been blaming, is the same company that supplies Toyota is also supplying some of the American companies. So if that's
General
actually a problem,
Motors,
it could be a problem for American cars, too. My sense about that whole thing is that a lot of people have been saying it's a fundamentally a software issue. I would actually, I own a Toyota, a Highlander, a hybrid. I would guess it probably is a software issue because they've really, you know, sort of pushed the envelope in bringing, you know, sort of in digitalizing the control system. And when you're really pushing the envelope, there probably will be, you know, problems, glitches that you don't foresee when you're doing it. This is actually, it's strangely unfortunate, I'd have to say. Generally, I'm not a Toyota basher because without Toyota, this world would be a lesser place. I mean, they actually build really good cars.
they
great
do
safe cars.
I'm not bashing Toyota. I'm just wondering why suddenly there are so many problems, and I was wondering if it was attributable, after reading your book, if it was attributable to the suppliers.
Oh, no, I'm not saying you were bashing them, but there have been these people who've been bashing Toyota, and I think it's unfortunate. But what is really amazing with Toyota, and this is actually something I write about in the book, is and this is the larger danger of too big to fail, is 2 years, 3 years ago, it was actually July of 2007, coming up 3 years ago, there was an earthquake in Niigata, Japan. It knocked out this little company called Riken, which makes piston rings. Within about 4 or 5 hours of that earthquake, there's 12 large vehicle manufacturers in Japan. All 12 of those companies shut down because all 12 of them were sourced on this one factory for a piston ring. It's like a $3 part. So, so what I did is, like, 2 years ago, in summer of 2008, I spent 2 months in Japan really looking at that industry and talking a lot to the people in Toyota and saying, how is it that you guys can make a decision like this where you would actually communalize your supply operation with Nissan, which is your arch competitor, with Honda, which is your arch competitor? And they're saying, well, gosh, you know, we know it's kind of dumb, but, you Americans were doing it. We're just trying to keep up with you guys. So when, the real dangers of the supply system, there's two dangers when you communalize your supply base like that. One is that you can have a crash, an industrial crash, where things just kind of domino down. And the other one is that when something goes wrong, when a company, your supplier, maybe has some kind of is putting out a bad product, then suddenly the entire system becomes polluted, or the entire system ends up with the inferior quality, whatever the component is. Mm-hmm. So, and they also have slower innovation in that kind of a system because there's no incentive to innovate if there's only one. So, there's so many different problems here.
I know.
But I think the key thing is it's important to emphasize that, I've been doing this for a long time. I've covered this issue for, I started first writing about this about 8 years ago. And I have now, for the first time, I'm seeing like a real energy out there to do something about this. And these problems are huge.
They are.
They're systemic. But I'm actually very confident that we're going to be able to get this stuff under control, master these problems. We're going to it ain't going to be easy, but we're going to
remake. No, we have quite a battle ahead of us in this. And yeah. Obama doesn't seem to be taking the lead aggressively enough. He talks about regulations, but they aren't addressing, as you say, that the systemic root of the problem.
Yeah, I had pretty high hopes for President Obama.
Me too.
And I think he's done, on the financial system, he at least showed recently when he kind of stood there with Volcker for a few days that he kind of had the ability to change. It was too late by the time he came out with his Volcker plan to reorganize the financial system. He should have done that a year ago, but at least he did.
I know.
But, it's my sense is that, he's a smart guy, and hopefully we're going to be able to count on him to break away from the people who have been operating him for the last few years, even before he was became president. But the key thing is that it doesn't matter. It's not a matter of any one person. What it is a matter is us, the American people, making a decision that we're not going to live in this kind of world, and making very, very simple demands of our government. And the simple demands are we want, a competition, we want rivalry, we want distribution of risk, And, you know, we want big things made smaller.
The problem is a lot of people don't even have a grasp as to what's happened, and it wasn't until I read your book that I even had an understanding. So it's got to get out. I'm grateful that you're hopeful. I'd like to share that hope. Where is it coming from? I believe you.
It's coming from, you know, I got, late last year I spent about 10 days in London, you know, and there's actually a very interesting movement that has taken hold in the UK. There's an anti-monopoly movement that's taken place at the grassroots level among the entrepreneurs in that country. And they're saying, hey, enough, you know, they actually have less concentration there than here. Mm-hmm. But they said, enough is enough.
Yeah.
We're not going to give up our marketplaces. We're not giving up our properties. We're not giving up our liberties. We're going to fight these guys. So it's happening over there at the grassroots level.
That's great. Also
happening at the political level. There's a guy over there named Philip Blond. He's a theologian. And he's very close to, of all groups, he's very close to the Tories. He's part of the Tory Party, essentially.
Uh-huh.
And he's coming out with a radical anti-monopoly message. You know, break up the large supermarkets, distribute power out to the people in their own communities, coming from the Tory Party. I spoke with people in Margaret Thatcher's think tank, the chairman of Margaret Thatcher's think tank.
Oh, my word.
And it's like, you know what? These guys, this is the high establishment. They were so petrified. They understood that the world almost ended in September of 2008,
mm-hmm.
when Lehman Brothers went down. They understood how close we came.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want that ever to happen again. And they want these guys, these barbarians,
yes.
who are in our temple, kicked out. They want Goldman Sachs kicked out. This is coming from the people who run Margaret Thatcher's think tank.
I couldn't understand why so many industries were being destroyed intentionally. I still don't.
Well, it's, you know, it's intentionally because we really have allowed, there's a massive crisis of ownership in this country, and we have, you know, allowed these financiers to say, we're the owners. And the thing about a financier is often Wall Street or London or Moscow or China, you know, Hong Kong. These guys can't own anything because they're not
divorced
there.
From the ownership and the responsibility of ownership then.
Exactly. They don't have their hands on the machine. They don't
like
have
the
their
engineers
hands on
the past did.
So, yeah, so these, when they use their power, when they demand their numbers be met,
mm-hmm.
then the people who actually have their hands on the machines often have to take the machines apart
mm-hmm.
and sell off the parts in order to meet the numbers that these people want to see. So they actually use their power in a way that actually leads to the destruction of our stuff. So it's a crisis, and a real owner would never do that. No real property owner would ever destroy his or her own house.
It's an inheritance. It's a family heirloom.
Yeah, so we have this massive crisis of ownership, and so we have these barbarians, these financiers acting like barbarians, using their power in ways that destroys what we, the people, depend on, what we have made.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as we understand that, you know, we've been told these lies about free market this,
mm-hmm.
or free trade that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, none of this is free. It's all political. As soon as we open our eyes and understand the real nature of things in this country,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be very easy to fix, because we're going to understand the dangers we face, we are going to understand the stakes, and we're going to understand exactly who's doing it. So the key, as soon as we open our eyes
mm-hmm.
and we just admit, you know, that there's something wrong here, and that there is no such thing as a magical market out there in control. It's just a bunch. It's like the end of the Wizard of Oz. You know, we all saw the end of it, right?
Well, now
you know, you pull back the curtain, and there's a guy there with some levers.
It's a great analogy.
Yeah. It's the time for us to do that.
Our,
you know,
Hollywood,
like you got
screen.
These Wall Street Wizards of Oz, or, you know, you manipulating us and breaking everything.
Mm-hmm.
And once we pull that curtain back, you know, we will have control over them.
But they also have a military behind them. and a, there's a melding of government and corporation, almost fascism.
I don't think the military is made up of soldiers. Yeah, the military is made up of individual citizen soldiers. You know, people who fight, who believe in this country, believe in the promise of this country. That's another issue, is when the individual citizen soldiers, individual citizen officers who are run our military, mm-hmm. when they understand who they're fighting for and what these people are doing and what they have done to this country, these people are going to be our best allies.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like they're out there bleeding, they're dying to, you know, to deliver oil to China. So these guys can, like, run the factories in China and then bring the stuff over here that we used to make here.
Mm-hmm.
When the citizens, soldiers of this country understand who they're fighting for, that they're fighting for Wall Street, there's going to be, well, they ain't going to be happy about it. And I will bet anything that they're going to do the right, that these people will absolutely do the right thing.
You know, we have in the past... We really have. These firms were, well, I hate to go back to being regulated, but they were, and slowly dismantled.
Yeah, I mean, the word regulation, it's an important word, and I'm glad you brought it up.
There's bureaucratic regulation. How would you define it?
Well, you know, that's actually one of the words that they have used to sort of confuse us.
Yes.
And the word is deregulation. Because, you know, there's no such thing as deregulation. In any real world...
Centralization.
The choices between regulation by the public, by us,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make sure that these activities, these large corporations, are serving our interests, or it's regulation by some private group, mm-hmm. which is, we'll use the exact same institutions... to serve their interests.
Mm-hmm.
So everything around us is regulated. It's just regulated by financiers for their mm-hmm. interests. There is no such thing as deregulation. You can't get rid of regulation in this country, in any country. It's just part of life. The issue is who's regulating and to what end. And, you know, so we can actually... And what's necessary now is these guys, these absentee financier owners, who have been messing up all this stuff, we have to step in and fix these systems because they have misused them to such a degree that they're just about, they're falling apart, literally falling apart.
Yeah, yes, there isn't much left to fall apart.
Yeah.
We're pretty much on the brink. And I agree, most people are very much aware that something is seriously awry.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, you know, they can't even run their own banks.
No.
You know, so, and then we've allowed them to run our industrial systems and our information systems. And I'll tell you, here's another reason I'm actually very optimistic, is that there's a huge number of people who are inside these organizations who
mm-hmm.
we would say, you know, we would identify them as them, as people, the people on the other side,
mm-hmm.
you know, the enemy, essentially. There's a huge number of the people that we would sort of identify as the enemy, who are actually very good people,
mm-hmm.
very well-meaning,
mm-hmm.
and they are going to help us take apart these powers and restore, distribute power out to the American people again, and rebuild these institutions to function in a safe and stable way. And they're going to help us because they really believe. There's actually a guy, one of our heroes right now, Washington, Gary Gensler, comes
mm-hmm.
out of he's the head of the CFTC. He comes out of Goldman Sachs. And the people at Goldman Sachs hate him. Hate him because he knows how it operates, and he is doing the right thing. And there's going to be many other people like Gary Gensler who are going to step out
and do
the right thing.
And I think people are hungry for that because we've obviously been terribly taken advantage of and just been... robbed blind, not just monetarily, but our rights are being eroded as a result as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, the stakes here,
they're high.
You're absolutely right. They are immense.
They're
immense in terms of the stability of these systems, they're immense in terms of the political stakes. Mm-hmm. You know, will our children grow up in a democratic society?
I know.
In a Republican, in a small R Republican society in which they have the right to own property and operate and take their work into open markets, their ideas into open markets. It's up to us, you know.
And take back the control.
Yeah.
You know, one thing, we live in Santa Cruz, California, and we're very fortunate. We're starting to create our own, there's a small group working at creating our own currency. And a lot of the businesses are promoting buying locally so the money stays in the community. And there is that awareness. So maybe in other regions that's happening as well. Maybe it will happen that way.
It's a big thing, the buy local movement is really big. I've been talking to people. And it's big across the country. I was just in Austin, Texas last week, and you know, there in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You know, so people, human beings, are really smart, really energetic. We know how to build things and make things and keep them at the right scale. And already, if you look at the farmers markets, at the small farms, the artisan, you know, cheeses, the little breweries, you know, we have this marvelous ability to make things that are better. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we can't do it only by building up. We also have to do some tearing down.
We certainly do. You know, Barry, we're going to have to end it now. This hour went by so quickly.
Yeah, no, this has been great.
There's so much to share. I really want to have you back on again. Your book was phenomenal. I still haven't finished it because I had to really look at what I was reading and think about the consequences of it. I have to reevaluate how I look at the economy and what it means, and cherished ideals have been shattered, and you explained it very well. So I just want our listeners to know we've been speaking with you, Barry Lynn, and he's the author of Cornered, The New Monopoly, Capitalism and Economics of Destruction. And do you have, what is your website we can address people to as well?
Well, if you Google my name and the word cornered, there's a few places that'll pop up. I mean, there's the Facebook page, and there's I'm at a think tank called New America.
Go
there.
That's where I went.
And I have one called Barry C. Lynn, but we actually haven't done enough care and feeding of that system, of that website recently. But
it's just brilliant what you've accomplished.
Well, I appreciate it, but we're going to, you know, this is going to work out because the American people are really, you know, one of the things that happened in this, writing this book, is my appreciation for the American people just went up
hugely. Yeah, I know. And that, on that note, too, I'm really glad to hear you say that. And I read ahead to the final chapter, and I agree with you. I just wanted to hear a little bit more. Well, thank you so much.
Well, it's been great to talk to you guys.
It certainly has.
Look forward to the next time.
Absolutely. All right, thank you. And I'll send you a link, a recording.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Yes. Bye-bye. Well, that was Barry Lynn, author of Cornered, The New Monopoly, Capitalism and Economics of Destruction. And we're going to change gears here, as we always do on Tickling the Belly of the Beast. We're going to be learning about divine unity and another way of pursuing that through Tantra sex with Corey Folsom and Lindy James. And in a moment, I'll put them on. You can say they're here right now. Why don't you? And then I'll play a little bit of music, and then we'll get started. Have a gentle transition. Lindy, do you want to say hi? Oh,
good afternoon.
She's great. And Corey Folsom.
How are you doing?
And I've known Corey for years. Just getting to know Lindy, and I'm absolutely delighted. And we're going to be talking about the feminine face of sexuality and the permission zone and much, much more. So you need to stay tuned. Now we're going to put on, let's see, what do we have here? Beautiful World in Existence.
That's one of my favorites.
Oops, I'm getting it on now. Beautiful World in Existence. I believe, unless our sound is down. Oh, it's not playing right now. We'll get it a little bit later. But in the meantime, I want to introduce Lindy. Lindy, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started? Got to find your little bio here. I went from one to another. You integrated the Tantra that we're going to be learning about. There's no one specific path. And let us know who you studied with. And
well, it was about 17 years ago. I lived in Half Moon Bay, and a dear, dear friend got a whole group of friends to go to this Tantra class.
Oh, fun.
And the only reason I went was that I had seen another friend go to this class a year ago before, and it had changed her, and it continued to change. So many weekend retreats, people are really changed for a few days or a few months, but it doesn't stay.
And that's true.
I saw such a transformation in my friend. I was like, oh, I'm really curious about this.
What were the changes that you saw?
She just allowed herself to be, in my opinion, more beautiful. So she went from wearing baggy overalls and scraggy hair to... And not that that's wrong, but it's not even just how someone dresses, but it's the beauty that they allow to come from the inside. So it doesn't have to do with your clothes or your age or your size of body, but to see that beauty come forth and shine. You know, it's a kind of radiance. And
you have that. Indeed.
Well, it helps when you have a beautiful Tantra partner as well.
I know. I've known Corey for a long time, and I've watched his the way he moves. It's much looser, and he's smiling. He can really hold a gaze and really be present.
Yep. That's what we like. And so it was fun because a group of us went. And it was with Charles and Caroline Muir. And I was scared to death.
I bet.
I could hardly breathe.
Would be too.
Kind of like being on the radio for the first time.
Oh, I had no idea you were nervous. I get nervous. I do this all the time now. They can't see us.
And so in this course, they teach basic Tantra. And... something in me, just this way of living in the world and the way of communicating and the ability to be more intimate and just real, touched me so deeply. And at the time, I had a lot of self-doubt and not sure of myself. And they have a thing called a puja. It's a, it's a ritual where you stand in front of one of each other and look in each other's eyes and just really show up and see the God Goddess in each other. And at a certain point, the Tantra teacher was actually holding my face like I was the most beautiful thing he had ever seen.
Oh.
And it went straight into my heart. It was the first time I really got that.
Yeah.
And, oh, I am special. I am beautiful. And that was the seed that was planted. And it's been many years and lots of Tantra classes. And eventually, I went to Tantra camp and got my certification as a Tantra teacher. And so now that's the gift that I give to other people. I plant that seed of how special.
And the world needs so much more of that. I mean, the whole cliche, make love, not war, it still applies today, but this is such a deeper level of being in the world.
Yes.
And really present and taking the time. You wrote about slowing down and the importance of that and why.
Exactly. So if we slow down enough in this busy world where everything is on a schedule and we got to be somewhere and we got to get so much done, that we stop hearing our heart, mm-hmm. stop hearing our truth.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And for many women, we stop hearing our yes and particularly our no.
Yes.
And in my courses, you know, we really get the students to practice saying no on purpose. You know, dare to disappoint, dare to say your truth.
So you're really getting in touch with your self-love.
Absolutely. And the permission of it. You know, it's why I call myself the permissionary.
I love that. It sounds so alluring at first. Permission, so, whoa, should I say that over the air? Yes. This is kind of fun. Oh, did you want to say something, Corey, about how you got into it and what your objectives were? And then I'd like to get into some of the practices and then the impact it's had on your students and how you've seen them evolve. And you may have questions too, Thomas.
I'll chime in from time to time.
You do.
Sure, thanks for asking. I actually first studied Tantra many years ago with Bodhi Avinasha and Ipsilu Tantra, and I really liked it. I did a lot of the practices. I've actually kept some of those Ipsilu practices as part of my what I do today, but Tantra didn't really grab me in such a compelling way until about this time last year when I took a class with Charles Muir and Leah Alchin, Source Tantra, and it just rocked my world.
I know. I remember you telling me all about it. I ran into you at Gateways.
Right. And so it just reoriented me in a completely new way to just who I am, and the world stopped and then began over again. And you know, we talk about tantric practice, and it's, for me, it's not so much about, I'm not really practicing anything. I'm actually practicing or stopping practicing being who I wasn't, and I'm just now being myself and my more in touch with my true essence.
That's beautiful. Yeah. What a difference. There's a real difference.
Right. I'm
being who you are.
Sure.
How does that happen there in the process of the workshop?
Well, you know, the Tantra really, it's in part an invitation to our own divine nature, to our own, you know, for me, masculine core.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can say hello, you know, to another person in a partner practice and gaze deeply into their eyes and just see them so deeply and have them look into you so deeply, to slow down, as Lindy was speaking about, to just slow down and be present, to feel deeply of yourself and then bring that presence, you know, to a partner is just phenomenal.
And it can be really scary at first. Like, look in my eyes.
I know.
And there's this squirminess, and I used to get, you know, like, dizzy. And so part of the tantric practice is really being in your breath, breathing deeply, softening your belly, and allowing yourself to be seen. There's nothing you need to do. There's nothing you have to be. Just you. And so having partners to practice that with, you know, it's a funny thing. You can end up falling in love, you know, in a minute. And it's really, you know, so again, it's like it's a simple doing and a simple being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's steps you can do to help you get there. But really, you don't have to do anything else but be yourself.
So I'm curious, like, what would happen if I went to a workshop? What would it, what would I experience maybe the first day? Can you give me an idea what?
Well,
and maybe the feelings that people might go through and the experience like some of the specific practices, maybe. You talked about gazing in eyes, and then you had emailed to me about they're both solo and partner practices, and then a few touching skills, and then tuning, why, when, and how, and then the tantric embrace. And it all sounds so beautiful and sacred and very honoring.
Yeah.
When I talk to you a little bit more about it, and then it's embracing and honoring the difference between the masculine and the feminine, and doing it from the heart and with a lot of integrity, mm-hmm. and sort of peeling away the assumptions that get in the way of who we really are, and the intimacy, really going deep. There's such a fear of that in our culture.
There is. And our families, and so much hurt can happen in our growing up that intimacy becomes something we step farther and farther away from. Mm-hmm. But when you bring the sacred in, mm-hmm. when you bring the integrity in, then intimacy becomes a little safer again. You get to, like, stick your toe in the water and notice, oh, nothing happened. Nobody hurt me. Nobody took my needs for granted or mm-hmm. used them against me. And so the teacher will, you know, begin by teaching, speaking a little bit to how little we were educated around intimacy and sexuality and relationship. We saw what happened with our parents. You know, the lucky ones got to see good relating, but
yes.
most of us didn't. And when we were educated, you know, it was like some older kid told us a few things. And we
yes.
fumbled through the, you know, how painful
giggled
it was.
Through and
yeah,
poked fun at.
Yeah. And so in the beginning of Tantra, it's about your connection with yourself, you know, some yoga even, some connecting with your own body, slowing down enough mm-hmm. to feel what's happening, what you want,
mm-hmm.
you know, what impressions you're having, and then practicing really being with, so you might have some modalities of touch. Mm-hmm. And the class is really simple, you know, it's like there's no clothes removed, but maybe on your partner's arm.
Uh-huh.
You know, how to touch gently with presence. You know, just the little things that we didn't learn as we were learning about sexuality and intimacy.
And with respect and boundaries. And,
mm-hmm. and we're bringing our attention to our touch, to our fingertips. And before that, we do a lot of breathing practices so that we're in touch with ourselves and we feel of ourself, and then with our integrity, we can, in our presence, we can then touch our partner with intention, with consciousness, mm-hmm. and with presence. And so it's very honoring. Touch. So
because you have an experience of that before you're touching someone else, maybe mm-hmm. touching yourself, so then you know what may be painful, what to stay away from, and there's mm-hmm. And there's communication. It sounds like a mm-hmm. safe space is created mm-hmm. too.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. it's interesting. I remember feeling almost like a virgin again.
Ah.
And the sweetness of having a man be that slow with me, mm. present in his eyes. You know, how often we make love with that lights out, and you got to be quiet. And so to have someone be that present and take that time and really follow my rhythms mm-hmm. and each other's rhythms, the tears, the tenderness, it was so precious to me, and I could feel my feeling about myself and my own preciousness mm-hmm. and my attitude towards sexuality really change. And innocence comes back.
Oh. I can see that now. Wouldn't have occurred to me.
We're also practicing breathing. In Tantra, there's a lot of breathing practices in order to get ourselves in our bodies, mm-hmm. as opposed to, say, in our head. And so if we're in our bodies, that's also where truth lives, a body's own wisdom. Mm-hmm. And also where present time, that bringing ourselves into our bodies can bring us into present time. And so we're not in our head fantasizing about the future or a different present in any way. We're just here. Mm-hmm. And so that's also something really wonderful to bring into a sacred union.
And you can tell when someone's really with you and when they're not.
Exactly.
Their gaze, just their whole demeanor changes. And to get that kind of attention is very special. Mm-hmm. That in and of itself.
Right, and it can be even a challenge to have that much attention. So that's why we...
Can you say a little bit more about that? We're all...
Well, it can be scary. We're not familiar with that, you know. So the tools that we bring into that experience is opening our mouth. You know, when we feel challenged or scared, what does our jaw do? You know, do we breathe? No. So... relaxing the jaw, relaxing the belly, opening the mouth and breathing, mm-hmm. and making sound. And it is really amazing how, you know, what is the sound of scared? Oh, you know, what is this? What is the sound of that pleasure you just felt? Were you allowed to feel that? Is that okay? You know, and somebody's there with you breathing. Maybe they put their hand on just your belly and your heart. Or just your genitals in your heart, and having that connection be rewired.
Mm-hmm.
Having your heart reopened, you know, having the feeling like a virgin in your heart again, too, that innocence that's there.
I can imagine, though, that it could be painful.
Yes.
Because old wounds might be reopened.
Yes.
Probably for healing.
Right. So Tantra can go in a lot of touch on a lot of things. It can mm-hmm. touch in the wounded places. Mm-hmm. You know, it can also bring us to more ecstasy. Both can be a challenge.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. Too know, much.
Right. You know, we have this thing about upper limit, mm-hmm. or this thing about, you know, oh, that's a really painful place. Mm-hmm. Let's change the subject. Let's go over here.
Mm-hmm.
And... so we've learned skills to be with somebody when the tears come up.
Mm-hmm.
Often the wounding happens alone, or in secret, mm-hmm. with eyes closed. So when that, say it's fear comes up or rage comes up, to have somebody just be with you. Yes, mm-hmm. bring that rage on. I'm right here with you. It's okay. What's
that's
the sound
a gift.
Of mm-hmm. And we think there's going to be tears forever or a rage forever, but really it moves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when the wounded place is, you know, where we go to, it's just wonderful to have someone right there to say, you know, I'm staying here. I'm here with you. Let's put love into that place. Mm. Let's feel it together. And just to be held like that as a container is just a beautiful healing too. And so when wounding comes up, we can stay present with our love, and that's very healing too.
It's like reparenting ourselves.
Yeah. And also in another thought with touching is my teacher Charles says that, you know, touching should never feel like taking. You know, and and so, you know, touch should be a giving touch, and
so it's how you look at the person that you're with. What you're giving something, and you're open to receive.
Yeah, and also to arrive, you know, sourced from my own nature, from my own being, you know. I like to say, to ask a question is, am I clinging or am I bringing? And so when anyone is with their partner, they should be an attitude of service, of love, of what can I give? How can I serve mm-hmm. this person in love?
But the interesting part of that is when you're really giving somewhat to someone and you see them begin to blossom, it is a gift. So in a way, I'm still receiving.
Yes.
But I'm not looking for what I want.
The other side. Yeah, I'm you're simply giving.
And I find it's, you know, with Corey, if sometimes if my tears come up, and all he says is simply, I'm here with you. Mm. I'm not going anywhere. just flow. I mean, it seems like even corny sometimes, but how often
I can relate.
You can see it touches you too.
Oh yes,
hear that.
That explains it too. There's so many ways of being present, verbally and simply just being there, and you can feel it.
Yeah,
and that's probably deepened. I imagine.
Yeah.
Going through this, so also we had emailed back and forth about the difference between the masculine and the feminine, so much roles. What did you... Roles, yeah, in the practice, and how does that differ?
Well, everyone has either a masculine or a feminine essence, mm-hmm. so we don't use the terms male or female because, you know, we each have both, and most people are more oriented to one or the other, and so in tantric practice we really get to see, you know, what comes up when my woman goes to a very tender place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my masculine shows up just naturally. And it's because it's who I am. And so, you know, we're getting away from actual tantric practice or mm-hmm. ritual or steps like that and just dropping into who we are. And when she's in her feminine, whether that looks radiant and glowing or if it looks, you know, tender and even tears... My great reward, if you will, is that my masculine shows up. The me that comes forth is partly what I live for. Mm. So just that natural polarity.
You do, but not all men.
That's true. And it's really about what's your core essence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a very strong masculine side. I grew up on a horse ranch, and I can drive a tractor. And I love the feeling of that, you know, and in a way, a kind of guy-like way. But when it comes to being with my partner, I want to be more on my feminine side. And when his more male side comes out, I really relax. I can feel a trust. You know, so if I'm around a man who has a more of a core feminine side, man or woman, my masculine side will come marching right out. I'll take care of things. I'll get in my truck. You know, it's an interesting way that polarity dances. But my preference is to be with a core masculine, and it's not right or wrong.
And Corey is.
Yes.
Yeah, I can. I know Corey too. Yeah,
he's my
very
guy.
Much so. He's got you covered. What's the term? Back covered or something?
He's got my back.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Lindy being very feminine wants to flow and to move and to just express herself in a very flowing way, but she also wants to have a container. And as if she was a river and I was the banks of a river, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I can be her container within which she can just let go. But it's within, you know, my arms or the banks of my river, I'm the banks of her river, so
she's
speak.
She's safe in her vulnerability.
Exactly. Well said.
Right, but the interesting thing about that is that the river shapes the bank, but the bank contains the river. So the feminine is like, you know, as the female, I'm all over the place. I'm all creation.
Yes,
you know? So I can be on the phone and cooking soup and typing on the computer and da-da-da-da, you know, where guys are more like, oh, I'm washing the car and I'm washing the car.
Don't distract me. We just talked about that. Now you're talking about this on top of that one.
Yeah, but I like the feeling of when I'm all over when either my own inner masculine comes and says, Lindy, you need to type this paper
here. Tighten it up here.
I hate that.
I know. Just for, I promised myself a reward afterward. Yeah. We have been gabbing. Poor Thomas hasn't been able to get a word in edgewise.
One of the deals here is we only have three mics, so I've been largely silent just because of logistics. But one thing I want to put out there for the radio audience who can't see you two is that there's definitely a glow about you guys.
Yeah.
I mean, there really is. And I can see that you guys are connected in a way that seems really enticing or admirable or, you know, all those kind of adjectives.
Delicious.
That could be one, too.
So I'm
intrigued just by the way that you two show up. But I wanted to get back to, you were talking about breathing practices. I'm wondering if can you teach us one? Are they short enough that you could do and have us do a breathing practice? Or you, Lindsay.
It's with a D, Lindy.
Lindy, I'm sorry.
Lindy.
Yes. Do you want to do the Bija mantra? Let's do the spooning one, just the way of connecting.
Mm. Excellent choice.
Thank you. So it's a simple exercise of connecting at the end of the day, beginning of the day with your partner, and you can even do it with a friend. In fact, I do it with my friends all the time. I have the Church of Lindy in bed. So basically, when you connect your bodies together, just lying together, immediately the brain starts producing oxytocin and your nervous system starts to calm down.
Mm.
So with a partner, you want to also connect with each other, then you can just lie together in a spooning position. Whoever's the most tired, or even this is really good after a fight, whoever's the most angry should be in front.
Whoever feels the most need for nurturing, kind of on the inside.
Yeah. And you just lie together with, so the person is in, say I'm the one in back, and I'll reach under their neck and put one hand maybe on their forehead and one on their belly or one hand on their heart.
Mm-hmm.
And together we practice taking breaths into each of the seven. Oh, I couldn't hear myself.
Now we can.
Each of the seven energy centers or chakras. Okay, so there's the base. And I'm not going to give the whole detail of that, but let's just say we're going to breathe into seven places together, and I'm going to lead. So we're just going to take a breath in. And a complete breath. So when we do a complete breath, we breathe into our belly, let our belly extend, let our ribs open, our chest open, and really fill with air. And you let the air out with a sound, with a sigh. So by the time that you've taken one to three breaths with the seven centers all the way ending at your forehead, you've really tuned with each other. So it not only does the air help the oxygenate your blood and it revives you, but it also brings your mind and your energy and your nervous system into connection. It's a beautiful way to begin the day, to end the day, to, if you want to make love, to start that way. You can also do it by sitting what's called yabyam. So the man is sitting like an Indian style, and she's sitting on his feet, and her legs around his his back, and then feet together, you know, like on a bed or the floor, you know, on zafus or cushions of some sort. And so then you're upright, and still your bodies are aligned, and breathing again through that, and looking in each other's eyes. Beautiful way to connect. Very simple.
Beautiful.
And it's just a practice, and you can do it every day. And it'll be surprising how much that changes your body. They become like tuning forks.
Mm-hmm.
And you become
That's why it's called tuning.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So quicker and quicker your bodies will tune with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine that it's a kind of slowing down too, and that connecting and going into your day or going into love making. It's not like, am I in the mood? Do I feel like it tonight? Am I feeling horny? It's mm-hmm. really, again, the mm-hmm. tantra from our teachers, the Hindu tantra, but all the tantras was taught how to create love,
mm-hmm.
how to create love making, but how to create love. And this is just a really simple tool.
And then can you say a little bit about the power that is unleashed, that sacred power from the practice?
Hmm. Well, I experience it.
And how it's, yeah, how you can use that and channel it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not sure if you're talking about like kind of Kundalini energy.
I haven't labeled it. I'm just aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've experienced it. Yes.
And
then the two become another element, and there's a power to it. It's not power over or any power under it. It's an equal surge of power. I don't know how energy. I don't know how else to use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
describe it.
I call it a charge.
Charge.
Like my whole body can feel a charge, a power charge. Yeah, like if I was like an electrical appliance, and I'm plugged into some source,
and
the lights
free
are on
to contain it or to expel it.
Well, with the tantric breathing, we'll pull the charge from all the chakras and up, oftentimes to our head or our brain, mm-hmm. where we kind of collect it in a sensation, so kind of filling and offering it to God.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I've experienced that, and I just wanted to address it and see where it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes you can, especially with the breathing practices, you can kind of run that charge in a circuit between the two people, especially in the yab-yam position as she was describing. So the energy just goes around in a circuit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also wanted to, before we get too far away from the tuning discussion, I wanted to mention that it's just also a way to just, as we said, be in tune with each other. You know, if you're in a relationship and you have a lot going on, like you have kids, you both work, there's, you know, the house to maintain and all this. If we make love when both people are in the mood at the same time, then oftentimes it isn't very often. And just putting our bodies together, just holding, breathing together, slowing down with nowhere to go or nothing to do, but just breathing and holding, that's just one way to help create this harmonization where you both have this, that natural affection you already have for each other is allowed to just be there.
Mm-hmm.
What are our teacher often says it's not love that goes away, it's the intimacy that goes away in a relationship.
Yeah.
And
good point.
And for me to feel like, oh, if I only have 10 minutes to connect, and there's no goal, like I don't have to have an orgasm or I have to give somebody an mm-hmm. orgasm, but we're just going to connect. It's interesting how that adds up. My body starts to open more each time. I'm more willing. I don't have mm-hmm. this fear.
Our expectation that's running it.
And the fear isn't even always conscious. You know, the knowing that I can just come together and breathe with my partner or one of the many things that we've learned to do together for 10 minutes, you know, or just kiss for 10 minutes,
mm-hmm.
you know, but really being in your lips, not just mm-hmm. kind of kissing while I'm doing the grocery list.
Yeah.
And you can even let one person just be totally passive and receiving and be kissed.
Mm.
And then later it switches roles and the other person can just receive. It's pretty nice.
Mm. And to know that that's coming.
Well,
But what happens also in that, you know, in any of this, really dropping into your body, dropping into through the use of your breath, when you really do conscious breathing, all of a sudden you notice down there, you know, you start to notice the tingle in your genitals, or you start to notice the energy in your heart, or the power in your belly, you know, whatever's there, you start to notice what's there. And when you're in your head, when you're thinking about a million things or the list of supposed to's, those are overlooked.
Yeah, just in the process of breathing, when I meditate, the mind does quiet.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I can feel much more in my body.
Mm-hmm. And lovemaking can become a meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And we leave the habits out. You know, first was this, then we touch there, and then there's excitement, and then there's, you know. I mean, I still catch them. I still catch those supposed to's passing through. But when we're slow like this, when we're connected like this,
you can watch them.
Not only can you catch them, but you can catch what the real impulse is. What really
fine,
am I longing?
Subtle.
Yes. What is it that would really bring life to me? And often it's much stiller and slower than what we've learned. You know, to make love and hold still. That can have so much more, as you spoke of that energy.
Mm-hmm.
It can start to me, it's an energy fountain.
Mm-hmm.
And I can feel it out the top of my head. And then we end up being like one giant.
And to share it and not contain it.
Yeah.
And do you speak about it or just relish it? Oh, probably whatever.
All kind of things.
Yeah.
But if you make
there's no
but if
can
you,
rule.
No formulas.
Tell me the rules of this one now. I have to follow the rules.
But what helps to make
exhausting.
It, to give it more flow is making sound or moving your body in an authentic way, in a way that you feel spontaneous or in
natural.
Hakomi training, we call it the organic impulse.
Can you tell me a little bit about Hakomi?
I can only say my own experience. You know, Hakomi is like taking Zen and traditional psychology. So it's very much about mindfulness, about being present.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm working with clients and they're having experience, then I really drop them into that experience so that it integrates. You know, the ahas. The tears.
I can see it magnified.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, using Hakomi in my tantric teaching, in my classes that I teach and all of that, so someone is experiencing something and they get in their head and they're going on about it, and I'll stop them and I'll say, so what tells you you feel excited?
Mm-hmm.
How do you tell? Where in your body are you excited? And they get this funny look on their face. It's like, so is it in your belly? Is it in your heart? Or, you know, feel your mouth, your cheeks smiling. And they're like, oh, yeah. I can feel like champagne in my belly. And the more you can do that, the more you can listen to your own natural needs, impulses. You know, that's the organic impulse.
Mm-hmm.
So when I work with men, I teach men how to be more their authentic self instead of nice, instead of what they think they should be around women.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your impulse? And at first they're either trying to do everything I want, you know, which then I'm like, oh. But I very lovingly invite them, like, what is it that you feel? And how do you notice it? You know, and I've had the simplest thing, like the impulse to put their arm around me and then do it, and then I show them how much I've enjoyed that.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Because it's coming from them and you can feel that genuinely.
So they get the instant feedback.
Yeah.
And if they do something that's not...
And it's relief for them too, I imagine.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I can be what I want to.
Right, because guys can be so shy. You know, or so how many times have been put down for how they are and squished, even as young men, to learn to just be themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of the practice field.
Such sensitivity.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
So Hakomi is a wonderful tool in anything someone could do.
Is that the Hakomi Institute up in San Francisco, or what is Hakomi? Where does it come from? What tradition?
The Hakomi Institute in San Francisco is what I studied with, and there's also Hakomi in Santa Cruz right now. It's part of in an offshoot, and they do both a 2-year training, which is just, I think it's 3 or 4 days a month, and you just get to steep in all kind of psychology stuff and learn about trauma, you know, just a taste of everything. And they have a lot of weekend classes, which I highly recommend, just to get a taste of it. And and like Tantra, my first intro to Hakomi, my whole being said, I know this. I already know this. This is in the body stuff. And so it's a real blend of the two. Yes.
So you're going to be offering some workshops soon, aren't you? Do you want to speak a little bit about those?
Well, I'm offering a women's group right now. And it starts April 7th, and it meets twice a month, the first and third Wednesday of every month from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m.
And that's downtown in Santa Cruz.
Yes.
Great. Yeah.
And I call it the feminine face of sexuality. And it's basically a chance for us to speak the what I call the unspeakables, you know, like what we just don't get to talk about.
Yeah.
We can really talk about relationship. We can talk about sex. We can use all the words that we don't usually use. and really
Great.
Get the nitty gritty about, and also it's like being kids again and being able to say, oh, well, I was making love and I had this experience, and has anybody else, or am I the only one? And
not hide it or feel shame about it or something,
right.
And just get it out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is something that all people should have, you know, men and women, and especially young women and adolescents, to be able to learn, you know, and feel empowered and feel their no, and
just ultimately so freeing.
Yes.
Which then allows you to explore other aspects of yourself and just go deeper and deeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just really enjoy it, and love the variety of women that come.
Mm-hmm. And your website is, it's easy enough to remember, lindyjames.com. Your name and just .com. Do you have a website?
No.
You're not. You're basically coaching or assisting in the workshops.
Mm-hmm.
With
Lindy. Yes, and I'm doing some private instruction as well. So I actually had another thought that I wanted to mention about the tuning as well.
Well,
and
let me interrupt him. He does very good private instruction. He's quite popular.
I bet, Corey.
So what I wanted to mention was that, you know, the tuning, we don't always have 15 or 20 minutes to put our bodies together and just breathe. But it's also a very useful practice if we, especially at transitions, when we're saying goodbye or saying hello, coming and going or going in some way, to just take a moment and just embrace, and you can look in each other's eyes or speak or not speak, but just to stop and feel of yourself and feel of each other, just to reorient to your love, to why you're together, is just also very useful. I put that under the heading of Tantra as well, but it's just a mini few seconds of just stopping and reorienting.
And that's something simple that you can do, but so profound, I mean, time-wise, possibly. Mm-hmm. You know, it sounds so innocent, but the impact that it has on our very cellular structure and whole way of being is immense. So what? I got to have so many questions, and we only have 10 more minutes, but how can you see, this is really general, but this practice impacting the whole world or just individuals?
Good question.
Well, I'm a peace activist. Really, I was raised Quaker, so it's always at the forefront, and this is another aspect.
Well, when you think about how much sexuality is repressed mm-hmm. in our culture, in people's families, and all over the world, and how much violence can come out of that, mm-hmm. you know, how it leaks out in ways. So if you're going to repress something as big as sexuality, and then it's going to leak out. It's just like anything. If you repress anger, then it'll leak out in passive-aggressive ways. Mm-hmm. So freeing up our sexual energy, and it doesn't mean having free sex with everybody. I'm not saying that. But freeing up that energy.
Because it's part of us.
It is part of us.
Thank goodness. Yeah. It's very natural.
Yeah. It's very natural. And you see it in young children before mm-hmm. they're told, don't touch yourself or don't do that.
And the animals.
Mm-hmm. I am really surprised, shocked sometimes, how little people touch each other, even just in a general friendly way. Mm-hmm. How much of the world isn't touched, isn't held. You know, when you think of one of my fantasies about Vietnam vets, or any vets, is that they go to boot camp to learn to use a gun and blah, blah, blah. But there's nothing that they go to unlearn that.
I know.
Like the un-boot camp where they read poetry and they lay in people's arms.
Yeah,
And so in
this culture, too, particularly, others tend to have ceremonies and rituals to bring people back from war. We know about some of the native traditions
and
Mideast.
I think in the ancient times there were tantra temples.
Yeah.
After war, people would go there before they went to their families. Or if there was a death in the family or any kind of tragedy.
It's chilling that we don't have that when you really think about it.
And it's illegal. in a way.
Yeah.
You know, you can't touch another person's genitals. It's considered prostitution. So it's so, like, locked up in our culture mm-hmm. and our legal system and everything. So if I take myself, if I take my relationship to Corey as an example, the more free I feel, the more my sexual expression has freedom. There's just an energy that comes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our sexuality is our creativity.
Yes.
That particular energy center is creation. That's where children are made, you know.
Yeah.
And so imagine if that's flowing and we're out in the world, we're going to be much more accepting.
Without distortion.
Right.
And this sacred union, it's not so much even an end in itself. It's just an access point, an entry into our own divine nature. And when one person heals however they heal, you know, we are ourselves, meaning that, say there's 300 million people in this country and one person heals somehow, well then one 300 millionth of our country is now better off than it was before.
And they're going out into the world.
Yeah, just healing is healing. So,
I thank you. Is there anything you want to cover that we haven't covered? I'm sure there's tremendous amount here.
Well, any one of these topics we could go on and on about.
You're right. You wanted me to ask, describe what makes my partner a great tantrika.
Tantrika.
Oh, tantrika. I can't read my own writing. What is that?
I know my partner tantrika. Is a great tantrika because she demands to see me. She demands the man to show up.
The Corey.
Yeah. And she's honest.
I like the way
she's
you say
courageous.
That. Uh-huh.
She's committed to the truth, to what is uh-huh. real. So
tantrika is simply the feminine partner.
It's someone who practices tantra.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And what are the magic moments?
That's actually a term I learned from my teacher, Charles.
Uh-huh.
And what I was speaking with about just taking even 30 seconds or a minute to just acknowledge your partner to hold them in embrace and to remind each other to speak to, if you choose to speak, why we're together and what I appreciate about you. And just to stop, pause, and connect. Just a magic moment. It can be stopped at a light. Mm. It can be, you know, going out the door.
So when you're at a stoplight and you're with your partner and the light is red.
I remember the magic moment. You feel like...
Just lean over and kiss for a moment.
You have to be somewhere in 5 minutes and there's a light. Remember, it's a magic. We have a time for a magic moment.
Or just touch hands and look in each other's eyes. Mm-hmm. Those moments build on each other.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That's SPC. Stop, pause, connect. And it's good for not just sexual partners, but just human beings in general. Just to connect with each other. I appreciate. Yeah. I see you.
Mm. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a really excellent point, and our teacher talks and teaches, and I agree with having tantra buddies, mm-hmm. and it's not friends that you actually have sex with, but any one of us could sit yab yum mm-hmm. with each other. And breathe and connect. And it's so healing to be so seen.
It's a way of treating one another with the utmost respect and dignity and love.
Mm-hmm. And the
from what I'm learning.
Our culture is so much about, like, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? How are the kids?
Pace.
La, 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 la. And I'll always interrupt. Well, it's common for Lindy to interrupt and say, how's your heart? And it makes people go... And they'll stop and, then they'll really answer. And they'll see me really and feel me really listening. And I think that really impacts the world.
Yeah.
You know, when you're at the grocery store and you're buying your groceries, you know, and you look at the person's name tag and say, thank you, so-and-so.
Look up.
Yeah, they get seen. How
Thanks.
Often we do, you know, they don't even get looked at all day long. How that touches them.
Kind of get used to that, too.
Yes. Yes.
What a thing to get used to, being in a rush. Well, it's about that time to end. This went by rapidly.
Yes. Thank you so much for having us. This is really fun.
You're welcome. Mm. I may take this. Sounds great.
Mm, good.
Thank you both, Lindy, James, and Corey Folsom.
Yes. Thank you so much.
My friends. Dear Aunt Thomas is here with us. He didn't have a mic. That's why he couldn't share much.
Adios from Thomas. So that means towards God, of course.
Yes. And we are all God.
We are. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Tickling the Belly of the Beast. If you're with us from 2 to 5, that's amazing. Thank you.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, March 10, 2010. Tanks shell areas in the Gaza Strip as settlers attack villagers in the West Bank. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli tanks opened fire on Wednesday afternoon at residents, homes, and farmlands located close to the eastern Gaza Strip borders. Residents reported damage to their homes and groves, but no injuries. Local sources said that the shelling was concentrated near the evacuated Israeli settlement of Nahal.